Good evening and welcome everyone to the regular meeting of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency Board of Directors for November 16, 2021. At this time, I would like to call the meeting to order, which was item one. We move on to item two, Pledge of Allegiance. And I would ask if Director Ozahosky is in attendance, which I didn't see his picture, but Director Ozahosky, would you kindly lead us in the pledge tonight while the rest of us remain muted and say it silently to yourself. Director Ozahosky.
We'll be honored. Thank you, President Martin. Please place your right hand over your heart and repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, Director Ozahosky. We can go through our announcements for tonight. This meeting is being conducted pursuant to the provisions of AB 361. Board and staff, please mute all of your devices until you are ready to speak to avoid feedback, echoing, and background noise. Make sure you unmute when speaking and remute when you are done speaking. All board members, please turn on your cameras during the meeting. Staff, please turn on your cameras when speaking and turn them off when you are done speaking. Board members will be advised to use the raise hand feature in Zoom when action and discussion items are presented. I will call on each of you when it is your turn to speak. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda during item three. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in this agenda may do so at the time each item is considered. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in closed session before they are considered by the board must request to make comment at the commencement of the meeting at 6:30 p.m. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. Please do not turn on your cameras unless you are speaking during public comment, and then please turn them off when you have completed your comments. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called upon by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. When you are finished your public comment, staff will remute you. Please be familiar with the last two digits of your phone number. Pardon me. The procedure for tonight's meetings are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from board members. Please raise your hand. Once concluded, I will ask for a motion and a second. After any further discussion, the board secretary will call for roll call votes. Any PowerPoints shown on tonight's meeting are posted on the SCV Water website. The board secretary will be doing attendance by roll call, and each item being considered will be taken by roll call vote. Before I pass it to the board secretary to do the roll call for attendance, I would like to ask everyone to be respectful of the time of staff and board members and members of the public. We do have a very long agenda tonight, so please keep that in mind. Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll for attendance?
As I call your name, please stay present. Director Cooper.
Present.
Director Bronstein. Director Bronstein.
Present.
Director Kelly.
Present.
Director Ford.
Present.
Director Atkins?
Present.
Director Armitage?
Present.
Director Planbeck?
Here.
Director Ozahofsky?
Present.
Director Colley?
I'm here.
Vice President Gladbach?
Present.
Vice President Mortensen?
Present.
President Martin?
I am present.
Thank you. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. We move to item three, public comments. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda at this time. We ask the members of the public wishing to comment on items covered on this agenda do so at the time each item is considered. Give me a break. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in closed session before they are considered by the board must request to make comment at the commencement of the meeting at 6:30. We do have one member of the public who's already submitted a written comment, but will also make a comment under item 3, which is Mr. Steve Petzl. Before I do that, before we go to public comment, Madam Secretary, are there any members of the public who wish to make a comment on closed session before we go to item 3, public comments?
I see two members of the public with their hands up, but I'm not so sure that it's for closed session. Ms. Noltmeyer, Ms. Dunn, if your hands are raised to make comment, public comment on closed session, please keep them up. If not, would you please lower your hands? Their hands are still up. Ms. Noltmeyer, just one moment. Ms. Noltmeyer, go ahead and hit star 6. You may begin your public comment on closed session items.
Cam Noltmeyer. I am a member of the Whitaker Broomite CAG, and we are having problems with Well N. For some reason, it has PFAS and perchlorate, and we're wondering if what is being done there is correct, because they are main problem is they are refusing to take a well offline that the state has recommended it be taken off because it has such high percentages of these particular contaminants. And we are running into these types of problems a lot from your agency. I guess they're coming from your agency. I don't know where else they could be coming from. But we feel that when the state says that a well should be taken off because it has accumulation of a certain contaminants, it should be taken off. We shouldn't have to go through what we're trying to do in saying, wait a minute, we want that well taken off. And I think if you could probably look into what's been going on with some of your properties, and that they want to just keep these wells on there, even if, however, you can look at your own documents and see where they put on certain little treatments or whatever. Like so many people, we do not in our household drink your water. We haven't for years. But there are a lot of families, and I judge by the number of people that can't pay their water bill, and that you have a number of them. I don't have it right in front of me right now, but that they probably are, and they're probably giving it to very young children. So I don't think that we should be having problems with Burmite CAG and getting, when the state is saying you should take this well off, that you can turn it around and do some messing with the numbers and try to keep that well on. And this is a problem that I hope you'll get back to us and get it solved, because it's in process right now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Noltmeyer, for your public comment. Ms. Dunn, please hit star 6 and you may begin your public comment on closed session items.
Wasn't sure how to let you know I did not want to talk on closed session items.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much. Is there any further public comment on closed session items? There is not. Back to you, President Martin. President Martin, you're muted.
Thank you, April. Do we have any members of the public who want to comment on item three, items not on the agenda?
Ms. Dunn, go ahead and please hit star six and you may begin your public comment.
Okay, I think I'm with you. First of all, I wanted to ask, and I can ask a question, but you don't have to answer it. Are the ad hoc committee meetings taking place? And if not, why not? The second item is at the finance meeting last night, I didn't say we should be subsidizing the Val Verde customers. I only felt if their water bills were also subject to higher rates because of SCV Water's new wholesale charges, they should understand how they might be impacted. Perhaps Director Ford should go out and introduce himself to the Val Verde community, as he is their representation on the SCV Water Board. And finally, Beth said we shouldn't be subsidizing the Val Verde community. I agree. But this triggered my thoughts as to what has appeared to be CLWA subsidizing the Newhall land for years. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dunn, for your public comment. Is there any further public comment? There is no further public comment. Back to you, President Martin. President Martin, you're muted.
Sorry about that. Is Mr. Petzl did not call in to make public comment?
I do not see him.
All right. Mr. Petzl submitted a written public comment, which amounted to a sketch of the area in the Frisbee Golf, in the disc golf area where he'd like to have it refenced. So that was the extent of his written public comment, and that is available on the website. Is it not, April?
It is.
Very good. That concludes public comment under item three. We can move to approval of the amended agenda, item four. Do I have a motion for approval of the amended agenda?
So moved, Martinson.
And RJ.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Do we have any public comment on the amended agenda, April?
We do not.
Do we have any questions or discussion on the agenda before we call for the vote? Seeing none, Madam Secretary, please call for the vote.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Atkins.
Yes.
Director Planbeck.
Yes.
Director Ozuhofsky.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Ford.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Kelly.
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen.
Yes.
Vice President Gladbach.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. The amended agenda has passed.
Very good. We can move to item five, special procedures. We do have a special guest with us tonight to make a presentation to our agency. And at this time, I will pass the meeting to Mr. Matt Dickens to introduce our special guest for tonight and hear the presentation. Mr. Dickens.
Thank you, President Martin. And salutations to the SCV Water Board of Directors. To all those attending tonight's meeting, thank you for sharing your evening with us. I'm Matthew Dickens, SCV Water Sustainability Manager. And for tonight's presentation, I am joined by Janet Keith, Siobhan Halushka, and Julia Groth, SCV Water Conservation Specialists, and the heart and soul of our water conservation team. It is a great pleasure to introduce Veronica Bledy, U.S. EPA WaterSense Branch Chief, to present the 2021 WaterSense Excellence Award to the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency. Veronica manages the WaterSense program in the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Office of Water. She previously served as Special Assistant to the Director of the National Drinking Water Program and led EPA's Drinking Water Infrastructure Financing Program. Before joining EPA in 1997, she worked in the academic research and environmental consulting fields on projects investigating the effects of atmospheric deposition on soils and water quality. She has a BA in geology from Smith College and an MS in geology from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. Veronica, good evening and welcome.
Thanks. Good evening, President Martin and members of the board. As Matt noted, I manage the USEPA's Water Sense program, which is focused on helping Americans find simple ways to save water through the use of more water-efficient products, practices, and professionals. And I'm very happy to be able to join you today from my home here in Washington, D.C. with some happy news. While I hope that you're familiar with Water Sense, I want to emphasize that we operate as a voluntary partnership program. And our partners include manufacturers who make the products, the retailers who sell them, and the promotional partners. And I consider water providers to be our most critical promotional partners because you're on the front lines in communicating with consumers. So much of our programming is focused on working with them and giving them tools to make their jobs easier. We have more than 2,100 partners across the country, including more than 300 in California. And over the last 15 years, they've helped us to save more than 5.3 trillion gallons of water and $108 billion in consumer bills. So one of the highlights of my year is the annual recognition of our Partners of the Year at the Water Smart Innovations Conference in Las Vegas. With ongoing travel restrictions due to the pandemic, we are presenting our 34 awards in a variety of ways this year. 17 awardees received an award at the conference in early October. And today I'm very happy to join you to recognize the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency as a 2021 winner for excellence in promoting the multifamily EPA water score. And since I missed the opportunity last year, I'll also offer belated congratulations for your 2020 Excellence Award. If we learned anything this past year, it is the power of resilience. Here we all are at our homes doing meetings over Zoom. We all gained the ability to adapt to whatever is thrown at us. And our partners developed great resilience as they pivoted their programs to respond to the inability to meet people face to face. And I think that, like other Water Sense partners, you were probably very busy because as more people were spending more time at home, they started to notice things, that leaking toilet, that increasing water bill, that old shower head, and maybe that yard that could use some work. So with people on the lookout for ways to reduce water use, it was the perfect time for SCB Water to relaunch your Water Smart workshops. And it's great that you follow up with the attendees of the workshops to learn more about what they did after the sessions. Your continuing rebate programs also help to get more efficient products into the homes of your customers. And with the drought, I can imagine that outdoor water use is a huge concern. So the success of your irrigation-related rebates will pay dividends. The focus of our recognition was on your multifamily water efficiency works program that you started a few years ago. I really can't say enough about how impressed I have been with the thoughtful design of this program. It is providing data to allow SCB Water to really understand the impacts of different interventions and demonstrate the benefit of the program to both the utility and to the participating properties. And in looking at your results, it must be really sweet to see that your verified water savings are exceeding what you had estimated. Honestly, when we released the water score a few years ago, we were not able to promote it as much as we would have liked. And so the efforts of SCB Water helped us to see how a utility could use the score to help them target their efforts and demonstrate success. I've pointed to the program as a model in that respect, and this year I asked my staff to identify a peer group of other utilities who could learn from the experiences of SCB Water to develop their own programs. And you are serving as a positive example to them and to others who work with multifamily properties across the country. Heck, just last week, you shared your work with members of the California Water Efficiency Partnership, and I'll be highlighting your work in a national webinar for HUD and the Department of Energy at the end of the month. And you've also provided us with valuable feedback as we try to improve the score and our resources that we provide for the future. So as a small voluntary program working to help consumers save water, energy, and money, we need to rely on the efforts of many others to help us spread the word about Water Sense. And SCB Water continues to step up in a big way. We appreciate your leadership efforts and the commitment of Matt Dickens and all of your staff working on water efficiency. And I look forward to seeing what the agency has in store for the future. So again, congratulations and best wishes for more achievements. And now I'll turn it back over to Matt to share some of their success with you. And I'd be happy to take any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to pull that presentation back up here in a minute. But let me start by, again, thanking Veronica for joining us tonight. And I want to share my appreciation to the Water Sense team, Jonah, Beth, Aaron, and others, for your leadership, collaboration, and support. The support that EPA Water Sense program provides to the water community is voluminous and vital to success. Can you pull the presentation back up, April? Okay, next slide. President Martin and esteemed members of the SCD Water Board of Directors, we are both excited and honored to win our second EPA WaterSense Excellence Award. Shortly after learning of the EPA Portfolio Manager Water Score tool for multifamily apartments, SCD Water embarked on a mission to engage with this customer sector in a manner that focused on data-driven strategies with a promise of sustained water conservation and water use efficiency. Next slide, please. Currently, SCD Water's Water Conservation Program administrators work with innovative technologies and other readily available resources to develop cost-effective, data-driven approaches to develop tailored customer outreach, education opportunities, and programs for both indoor and outdoor water use efficiency. While these efforts focused on residential dedicated irrigation metered customers, we are persistently working to better understand other demand profiles, including those in the multifamily apartment sector. Next slide, please. Back in 2008, when working for the Los Alamos Department of Public Utilities, I used the EPA's Energy Star Portfolio Manager tool to develop benchmarking capabilities for commercial energy use. In 2017, I was ecstatic to learn that this powerful tool would soon be available for multifamily apartment water uses. Shortly after this discovery, SCD Water conducted analysis for about 90% of apartment complexes in our service area. The tool enabled us to develop a program premised on desired program expression outcomes, water savings opportunities coupled with improved service performance. Next slide, please. For apartment customers, the water saving opportunities proved to be abundant. Once we obtained the water score for each of the complexes in the sample population, our team cross-referenced the sample year built by aggregate annual water use. This is when and where our compass pointed north. Based on relative peer comparisons, SCD Water can now connect our water efficiency services with customers demonstrating the greatest need and most abundant water savings potential, greatly enhancing our programmatic effectiveness and efficiency. Next slide, please. With this knowledge in hand, our team faced new questions on how to best utilize such information for maximum value creation. From past experiences, we understood that our successes relied on strategic engagement, tactful information sharing, and customer service. Considering these principles, we surveyed our customers to determine their unique sustainability priorities, budget considerations, provide educational programs offered by the agency, and other ways and means we could support their overarching goals. The water scores were then used to identify priorities for evaluation, efficiency measure implementation, and performance monitoring. Next slide, please. Considering that only two phases of the apartment program have been completed thus far, the success story couldn't be more compelling. Since 2019, SCD Water has installed or rebated thousands of shower heads, aerators, and premium high-efficiency toilets. For the seven complexes that have participated to date, we have verified over 109 million gallons saved indoors, with annual savings exceeding 60 million gallons, and we've only just begun. Utilizing the WaterScore tool for multifamily apartments and with the benefits of our continued partnership with the WaterSense program, we anticipate over hundreds of millions of gallons in annual water savings is potential. Next slide, please. For this slide, we're going to show you an example of a time series of data. On the x-axis, we have all the meters for this particular complex, and you can see them in CCF. On the y-axis, we have time dating from January 2019 all the way through May of 2021. When April hits play, we'll see how those meters' water consumption month to month translates into usage, and then what happens once we implemented our water conservation programs. April, can you please hit play? All of this data points our water consumption prior to the water conservation program expression and participation with our complexes. Right around the time of COVID, we'll see an increase in the bulk of the sample. However, once treatment and once our rebate programs were implemented, you can see what happens to their water consumption. Those water savings have continued through today. We update those water savings every year so we can run this analysis to determine how our programs are impacting those customers that participate in the program. As you can see, there's compelling evidence to note that our programs are successful, and by using these tailored outreach data-driven decision-making processes, we're able to connect resources to customers that could most benefit from them. Next slide, please. In conclusion, I once again thank Veronica for joining us tonight and for her support and the EPA WaterSense program provides to the water industry, conservation professionals, and water customers. I would also like to both recognize, Janet Keith, Siobhan Halishka, and Julia Groth, SCB Waters Conservation Specialists, for their commitment to excellence in service and for their dedication to helping our customers with their diverse and unique water conservation and water use efficiency goals. Further, I thank the SCB Water Board of Directors, Steve Cole, Matt Stone, the Water Resources Group, and the entire SCB Water family for all you do to create an environment that is conducive, constructive, and critical to our mission success and imperative to SCB Water's best-in-class utility practices. Lastly, and maybe most importantly, I must thank our customers and community water champions for their continued program participation and partnerships, of which our shared success is premised. President Martin, this concludes my presentation and remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Veronica. Before we engage in some discussion and comments, I know our board wants to just mention a few things to you, but we must take public comment. April, are there any members of the public who would like to make public comment at this time?
There is not.
Very good. Then we can jump right into board discussion. First of all, Veronica, thank you for joining us from across the country. I know it's late on your side of the continent and getting later. So thank you very much. And wonderful presentation. I'll turn it over to the board for comments. Director Armitage, you have your hand raised.
Thank you. I just want to say that I've heard in the past some people express concern that perhaps there's been more focus on single family residences in terms of conservation. So I hope that the information that was shared today helps myself and others understand the level of effort that's taking place for multi-resident facilities as well. And I just want to say thank you to everyone at the Water Agency and for all the hard work that you've put into this great project with great data. I love seeing the data. And also thank you to Ms. Blett, I'm sorry if I'm not saying your name correctly, and your team at the EPA for the recognition. So thank you, everybody. Great work.
Director Planbeck, go ahead.
Yeah, that's just ditto, moving the right in the right direction. Matt, you have an amazing team. I love them. They're wonderful. And Veronica, thank you so much for recognizing that, because, of course, it's really important that they receive kudos for this hard work, and it's a way we're going to make things better. We have the last free-flowing river in Los Angeles County, and we really need to be careful how we use our water. So this is really helping. And the savings are just spectacular. Amazing, don't you think? Just amazing. Thank you.
Director Bronstein.
I'm going to keep it really short because there's a whole list here. Congratulations. This is an amazing achievement. And congratulations to Janet, Siobhan, and Julia as well, because it takes a team and you guys are a great team. So. Kudos.
Vice President Gladbeck.
Congratulations, Matt, and your team for doing such an awesome job. And thank you, Veronica, for having a program that recognizes agencies that do such a great job. Thank you.
Director Atkins.
Nice job, Matt. Well done. Well done to the whole team. Thank you to the EPA. For the recognition, appreciate that. And I'd like to ask Matt a quick question. I would bet that the compelling chart you showed is just one little slice of a huge and commanding data set that shows the success of the program. So you were selective in what you showed us, and I bet you've got a mound of other information that would support what you're doing. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Director Atkins. Are there any other members of the board who would like to comment or question, have a question for the team? Seeing none, I'll add my words of congratulations to Matt and your team. Wonderful job, wonderful representative of our agency and of our community. And thank you, Veronica, for taking the time to come on our program and come on our board meeting and make the presentation. I know you've probably got a lot of others that you need to do this with, and we certainly appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you again, and just congratulations to all of you. Like, I have a really great job because I get to work with great partners like SCB Water and Matt and his team. So, you know, guys, keep up the great work. You're a model for the rest of the country, as far as I'm concerned right now on this subject matter. So thank you very much for your efforts going forward.
Wonderful to hear that. Thank you so much. With that, I guess we can say goodnight to Ms. Bletti, and you can adjourn to your sofa and TV or bed or wherever you're going to go, and enjoy your evening. Thanks so much again.
Thank you, Veronica.
All right, with that, we move to item 6, approval of the consent calendar. Do I have a motion for approval of consent calendar? We do have four items on the consent calendar tonight.
I would move the consent calendar, Lynn Planbeck.
Motion to approve by Lynn.
Seconded, Director Cooper.
Seconded by Director Cooper. Do we have any public comment before I ask for discussion and questions from the board?
It doesn't appear so, but I just wanted, we do have one person raise their hand. Hold on just a moment. I do want to remind the public that anybody calling in on a landline or on their phone to dial *9 to raise their hand and then *6 to speak. So Mr. Petzold, if you are there, I did receive your email and responded to your email. You do need to just hit *9. That'll raise your hand and *6 to be able to speak. Ms. Noltmeyer, just one moment. Ms. Noltmeyer, please hit *6 and you may begin your public comment.
This is on the consent calendar, correct?
Yes, it is.
And I was wondering what happened to the November 4th, 2021 meeting. It's not listed on your list of meetings that you had on here.
Ms. Noltmeyer, there wasn't a November 4th board meeting. There was a November 5th, and that is listed there as well as November 2nd.
I have in front of me an actual copy of a Santa Clarita Water Agency Engineering and Operation Committee meeting.
And that is separate, Ms. Noltmeyer. And there is a recap report in this packet on that particular meeting, but it's not part of the minutes.
So it was held, but it's just not listed there as being a held meeting?
It's not part of the board meeting minutes. We're approving the minutes for tonight's meeting. This is, or for those three meetings, which were...
Well, this says Santa Clarita Water Agency Teleconference Engineering and Operations Committee meeting Thursday, November 4th, 2021, start time 5:30 p.m. Now,
Ms.
I'm not
Noltmeyer,
making that up out of the air.
This isn't, no, the board approves the board meeting minutes, not the recap reports. There is a recap report in the board packet that particular meeting, but the consent calendar right now that's being approved is for the three meetings that the board is approving that were regular board and special board meetings. So that would not be on the consent calendar.
All right. Thank you for that explanation.
You're welcome. Do you have any further public comment?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Is there any further public comment? There is not. Back to you, President Martin.
All right, thank you. We can address Director Brownstein. You got your hand raised. You have a question on the consent calendar.
Yeah, I would like if staff, when there's a recommendation to in committee to move something to consent calendar, I would appreciate it if there was a little bit more information given and a little bit more backstory, so I can just so it can be reviewed easier, because in the packet it just shows, you know, just that snippet. So I'd appreciate if there was a little bit more information when things are on consent calendar. That's all.
Okay, your comment is noted. We do have a motion and a second. Do we have any other discussion on the consent calendar before we call for the vote? Seeing none, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Bronstein, how do you vote? Director Bronstein?
Yes.
Thank you. Director Planbeck?
Yes.
Director Atkins?
Yes.
Director Cooper?
Yes.
Director Colley?
Yes.
Director Kelly?
Yes.
Director Osipowski?
Yes.
Director Armitage?
Yes.
Director Ford?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbach?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen?
Yes.
President Martin?
Yes.
The consent calendar is approved, and that includes resolution number SCV-242.
Very good. Thank you, Board. Thank you, April. We move on to item 7, action items for approval. We have 4 action items, and I do have a list of presenters, as is our normal practice. Mr. Stone, do you have any opening remarks before we head into our 4 action items?
No, I think we can get right into it. Thanks very much.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Stone. We move to item 7.1. Approve the purchase of approximately 5,000 AMI compatible meters. Our presenter tonight is Mr. Mike Alford. Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you, President Martin. Good evening, everybody. And Director Bronstein, I can touch on 6.4 because it's sort of indirectly related to this presentation. It's for a grant for purchasing and replacing meters. And it's up to $2 million matching funds. So it's really, it's a good thing for our agency. So if you could go to the next slide, April, please. So I'll talk about what's on the slide, and I'll also talk a little bit about what's in the actual board memo. We have a little over 70,000 meters. Each legacy agency kind of went down their own path to selecting the meter manufacturer and the type of meters. All three were on their way to complete AMR, which I'll discuss in a bit. And then this is taking that next step, combining everything and moving into an AMI. So what is an AMI? There's three main types of meter reading, right? There's the traditional walking routes or manually read meters. There's the automated meter reading. So that's the AMR that I mentioned. All three legacy agencies were going down the path, if not completely already having AMRs. Then there's AMI, which is automated metering infrastructure. So the AMR, just to go back to that, that's when you have a laptop or some sort of mobile device in your vehicle with a another piece of equipment that transponds the communications between the meter and the laptop, and that's how you get the read, but you drive the routes. And then AMI is complete remote metering, and it's on-demand meter reading. So if you want to ping a specific meter, you can actually go into the software, hit that, and then you can get that read. AMI allows meters to be read without the need for field labor, walking, and driving. That's not to say we don't need the labor, because there are rechecks. There's, you know, troubleshooting things. Sometimes meters don't get picked up and such, but it does reduce the amount of walking and driving associated with reading meters. And then there's a series of what they call towers or base stations and repeaters that provide that constant stream. So if you can go to the next slide, please. So currently, Valencia system. So, you know, I don't like discussing our legacy systems because we are SCV Water. However, under DDW, we have separate what they call public water system codes. And so there's those service areas from the legacy. So the Valencia service area has a little over 30,000 AMR meters that are, well, about 25,000 that are AMR, and then still have 4,969 that are manually read. And those are the ones that we're targeting to replace with this presentation and this particular agenda item. Santa Clarita currently has about 11,000 that are AMI. And then the makeup of all of us, and then Valencia also has some AMI. So we're in the middle of two, what we call pilot AMI projects. The Valencia AMI is in the industrial center predominantly. And the reason why we chose that first is because of the lack of sidewalks. It's not really a safe route to walk Driving is not the best either, just because traffic tends to drive a little fast in the industrial center. So we piloted that first. It's working great. We're getting about 700 meters through AMI on that. And then the Santa Clarita system, I don't know if you know where the Dean tanks are, but if you're at the College of the Canyons, Canyon Country campus, and look up, I guess it would be to the south, you'll see a couple tanks there. Those are the Dean tanks. And we're getting about 10,000 roughly. And the reason why those are approximate numbers is because depending on the location of the meter, sometimes it gets it, sometimes it doesn't. That's why additional base stations and repeaters would be needed. And then the makeup of that, what we call our Castaic system, our Newhall, Pine Tree, Tesoro, Santa Clarita, and Valencia, the makeup is about 56,000 there AMR. Next slide, please. So I just wanted to show some pictures. Obviously, we don't have snow like the upper left, but I thought it was a nice picture to put that our staff does have to brave the elements, wind, rain. Probably the most harsh environment that our staff has to deal with is the heat. So you can imagine walking routes in 110 degree weather is not the most ideal. The center pictures in the lower left are our AMR. So you have a vehicle, right, that you have to drive around. And then in that vehicle, there's the equipment. You can see the little black box. That's the transponder. And then you can see a little antenna and then the computer that's in that case. And then to the left shows what a typical AMR meter would look like. Coincidentally, the AMI meters look very similar to that. And then on the right is an example of one of our base stations and towers. So we have a water tank, storage tank with an antenna on top. That's that pole. And then the equipment that's inside that enclosure. And I think this one's actually inside a booster station. So we generally will reuse existing facilities for the equipment. Sometimes we have to build something, but it's a relatively small thing and it would be on site next to a tank. Next slide, please. So regardless of AMI, AMR, anything, meters are an asset that have a useful operating life. Generally 10 to 20 years on average, I think it's about 12 before you start seeing reduction in accuracy on the read. And then also on AMR, AMI, you'll start seeing battery failure. So we do what we call routine meter replacements, and we base it on age, usage, the warranty. So the meter manufacturers warranty a certain amount, failure, right? So if something fails, even prematurely, we'll replace it and we'll get a warranty for that. And then the read style, right? So that's why we're targeting the remaining manual reads first, because we want to convert those. Instead of converting to AMR, we're going to go directly to AMI. So on average, we replace about 5% of our meters per year, and it's about 3,700, and our staff does that. And then there's the meter data, the age, volume, and read style. Next slide, please. So as part of our grant that we applied for, and I need to give, and I should have done it earlier, major shout out to Cheryl Fowler in our Water Resources Department. She cracked the whip and we got the application in on time. And we really think our chances are good this time, but fingers are crossed. So as part of that grant, we are proposing that we will replace approximately 20,000 meters over the next 3 years. And so this includes the 11,000 routine replacements, right? The 3,700 a year times three gives you 11,100. And it also includes those 4,969 manual red meters. We're going to target 1910 approximately in the Castaic system, converting those from AMR to AMI. And then Tesoro, 1157, and then approximately 2,000 in various other strategic locations. So, for example, right now we're doing some replacements in the mall that are getting picked up by one of our existing base stations and antennas. Next slide, please. So as part of that grant, we had to lay out the costs that we'd be spending. And so year one, we're proposing these 4,969, which is that 1.5 million we are asking for tonight. Year two, we're going to do about 2550, and that's 770,000 roughly. And this is just meter cost. And then year three, do another 2550, which is 770. So for a total of just over $3 million in meter costs for the grant year replacements. And then our routine, which we would do regardless, is a bills 11,100, and that's about $3.35 million. Now I have to say these are current meter costs. In fact, our current proposal for these 4,969, I think, expires on the 20th. So if you approve tonight, we will issue the PO tomorrow. Costs are going up, as with everything, and lead times are extremely long. We've been told 20 weeks up to 40 weeks, depending on the type and the size of the meter that we're requesting. So that's one of the reasons why we're coming now asking for all of these meters at once. Because in general, what we do for that 3,700 is we don't purchase all 3,700 at the beginning of the year. You know, we might purchase a few hundred in July, a few more hundred the next month. It's depending on workload and space in the warehouse and such. Next slide. So this, the funds for these 4,969 meters is included in our current meter replacement budget in the CIP for this fiscal year. And then again, as I said, there's long lead times due to supply constraints. And that's why we want to get this going. So the grant will start July 1. So we want to have these approximately 5,000 meters ready for install. And what we will do for these 4,969 is we will create an RFP and hire a contractor to do those, because we'll be doing our normal work plus our normal 3,700 per year. So I'll be bringing that back at some point after the RFP goes out. Next slide. So the recommendation is the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends that the Board of Directors authorize the General Manager to purchase 4,969 meters in an amount not to exceed $1,500,000. And that concludes my presentation. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Very good, Mike. Before we go to questions and discussion, Madam Secretary, do we have any public comment on this item?
It does not appear we do.
Very good. Then we continue with questions and discussion. Director Armitage, you have your hand up.
Thank you. So first, I also want to say thank you again to Ms. Fowler for once again finding this grant funding. I know that Mr. Albert has earned the title Captain PFAS. I think similarly, Ms. Fowler has now earned the title Captain Grant Funds. So thank you for that. To Mr. Albert, I want to say that I appreciate the way you always write your board memos. I think the historical information that you gave as I was reading this was easy for me to understand the path to how we got to this request today. So thank you for that. I also want to thank you for clearly stating the SCV Water Strategic Plan objective that this action helps to meet. I think that's very helpful for me. And it reminds me that the work that we're doing all comes back to a strategic plan. So thank you for reminding us of that. And I would actually like to see that continue to be part of future agenda items that we're being asked to take action on. And then lastly, I do have one question. I was very intrigued by the ability that customers are going to have to see real-time data in terms of their water use. And I just quickly, if you can just touch upon how customers and ratepayers will be able to do that with the new technology. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think my agenda items are fairly easy because they're operational and you kind of need to do them. I mean, I guess you don't have to go to AMI, but, you know, but thank you for the kind words. I appreciate it. So we applied for the first round of this grant last year. It was only $500,000 matching and we didn't get it. And one of the main reasons is because we just weren't ready for that customer portal interface. So Kathleen Wilson, who's our customer service manager, customer care, that's the appropriate term, is working on upgrading our billing system to accommodate this. And she will meet that target of 3 years because it has to be done before the grant time runs out. And so what it will do, I don't know all the specifics, and I think it would be a good presentation to bring back to you all to show, because you're also customers, but they will be able to log in and actually view what their current read is anytime through this portal. I think it's similar to, you know, kind of how you would access, you know, if you have a smart thermostat at home. I think it's the same type of thing because it's transmitting all the time, the meter is, to our towers. And then that information gets fed into the software called Harmony that would then communicate with the customer when they log in with their, you know, secure account information.
Thank you.
Director Bronstein, you have your hand up.
Yes, thank you. Thank you again, Mike. This is great and exciting. I had two questions. One is, what happens if we don't get the grant? And two was, what about security for, I guess, the system? Because if people can log in, hackers, so...
Yeah, great questions. I don't know the exact mechanism for cybersecurity, but I know Chris Perez, our director of technology, is involved in this process. It is a secure. So right now, customers can actually log into their account and view their bill and pay online. So I imagine it's that same portal. It would just maybe be another button that they would click on. And if we don't get the grant, we will still install these meters and replace them as part of our routine replacement. We just won't do it at the speed of 20,000 in 3 years. We would continue doing the 3,700. And so those, we would target those 4,969 first anyway. We might try to get all those in with our own staff up front first, but it would all depend. But we would still use the meters for sure.
Thank you.
Director Pineback.
Yes, I support this, but I also want to say the same thing that I said at engineering is when you talk about two of the legacy agencies, you really should talk about the third, because New Hope County Water District was fully radio read when it came into this new agency, and I think it should be applauded for that. And I guess Mr. Allred only feels like you need to mention them when they need stuff, not when they did a good job in the past. And I think that's history, and I think people should know it, that we were a small agency, but we did a really good job. That's one thing. And then, like Director Bernstein, one of the concerns with the smart electrical smart reads was that when people aren't home, if anybody is able to hack in, they will know which houses are not being occupied because there's no read. And I would like to hear, I mean, I support getting these meters and doing this anyway, but I would like to have some maybe presentation from Chris Perez about how privacy is ensured when we do this.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Pineback. Director Atkins.
Looks to me to be about a little over $300 a pop for these meters, right, Mike?
Yeah, roughly. I think the 3/4 inch are a little less, but the 1 inch and 2 inch are more, obviously. So on average, it's about that.
And it takes, I mean, we're looking at to do 3,700 a year, that's about 15 a day.
Yeah, it depends, right? Some meters, if it's in a sidewalk with, you know, an easy access, the guys can replace it within 5 to 10, 15 minutes. Sometimes homeowners put things over on top of your meter box and you have to
ask,
or landscaping, or there's a meter stop that you can't shut off. And you know, some of those could take a little bit longer, and the larger meters, the 2 inch, take a little bit more than that. Also our own, this includes, actually this 1.5 million No, it doesn't. It only includes 3/4, 1 and 2 inch. But our own crews do the larger meters. So we have meters up to size 12 inch and our staff does those.
So if it looks like a maintenance moment and sounds like a maintenance moment, it probably is a maintenance moment. Well done.
Yeah, this is a good one. This is a good one.
Vice President Mortensen.
Mike, I appreciated your report. It was great, as always, very very easy to understand the detail there. I wanted to cross-reference it with consent calendar item 6.4, where you stated in your board memorandum that case studies show that communities that upgrade to AMI systems can achieve water consumption savings of up to 15%. Changing the meter reduces water consumption by 15%. Can you explain that to me?
That wasn't my language. that's conservation group. So that initial board item was, the grant was a collaborative effort. I'm on the operations side. I think what it means is customers now are aware of what they're using. So if they know they're using it or they can see leaks, so it's one of the nice things about this. AMR meters do this as well, but it's in the lag, right? So it notifies us when we read an AMR meter that there's a leak. And so we can send out, and we do send out notices to customers saying, hey, we noticed that your meter is continually spinning. So with an AMI, a customer can log in and notice that. So if they know they're not using any water, they can then identify that they have a leak and take care of it. So I think where that comes from, is it 15%? I have no data to back that up, but Matt Dickens might.
Thank you for the explanation.
All right. Are there any other questions or comments for Mike? I've seen none. I'll add my words of thank you to Mike and your staff and to Cheryl for pushing to get this application in. And we win that grant. That's money in to the benefit of our ratepayers. So thank you so much for that. So do I have a motion for approval of items 7.1?
I would move it.
Motion by Director Planback.
Second, Atkins.
Second by Director Atkins. Is there any discussion or question? Seeing none, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Ford.
Yes.
Director Cawley.
Yes.
Director Planbeck.
Yes.
Director Kelly.
Yes.
Director Atkins.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Osuchowski.
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen.
Yes.
Vice President Gladbach.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item passes.
Thank you, board. Thank you, staff. Mike, you can remain at the podium. We're going to go to item 7.2, approved Decoro pavement repair change order. Mr. Mike Alford.
Thank you all very much. And just so you know, I try to get some of our operations staff to give presentations and they just don't bite. So I'm not giving up, but this particular project seems to be the gift that keeps on giving. If you remember, last year we came in and asked for authorization to replace about 1,500 feet of PVC pipe, 14-inch PVC, because we had four major breaks on this line within, I think it was 2 or 3 years. When our staff did that, they did the entire replacement. We then went out to bid for the paving. But after we received the initial bids, the city said it has to be night work. So we had to reject all bids at the advice of legal and rebid it. On the second round, which you all approved, I think it was last month, it might have been the month before, we had 6 contractors come out, paving contractors, but only one ended up bidding. And I remember it might have been Director Armitage, might have been somebody else too, maybe Director Atkins asked what we can do to get people to bid. And by showing up, you think they're going to bid. I just think people are really busy right now. At least that's what we're hearing from contractors. But anyway, RC Becker's a local contractor. They won the bid and they issued an initial change order of $4,000, but that's within General Manager Stone's authorization. So we approved that. That was for the additional cost of nighttime inspection from the city. So that money is just being passed from us to the contractor directly to the city. This next one was a result of additional paving that is now required. So what we do in general is prior to the job, we walk it with the city. And then after the job's done, we walk it with the city to find out what they're going to require in terms of paving. Sometimes it's centerline to curb. Sometimes it's an entire lane. This particular time, it was T-grind. And so what that means is when the contractor goes out there to pave it, they remove all the cold mix from the trench because that has to be properly removed and then put back in. And then T-grind just takes, it's like a T. It takes a few inches of asphalt, about 12 to 24 inches wide on either side of that trench. And they just scrape it out and then they repave that. This particular section is about 1,100 feet. I think it was 1,100. Yeah, 1,100 feet. When they started removing the cold mix, which is just cold asphalt, right, that they put in as temporary. When they started removing that, there was a section of asphalt that we were going to T-grind only between the trench and the gutter apron that started lifting up. So when the city saw this, they said, no, you're not going to be able to T-grind that now. You're going to have to remove that and repave it. And so Josh Jenkins, our operations supervisor who was working on this project, worked with RC Becker and actually negotiated what I feel is a reasonable price. Their initial cost estimate was $47,000. And we balked at it. We just said it's too much. And we had them submit the information. We kind of noticed some things. One thing that JJ caught, which I thought was great, is that they didn't back out the T-grind cost, right? So they don't have to T-grind it anymore. So they're backing that. They backed that out. And there were some additional things that I don't recall that he was able to get them to do. But in essence, we have to pave the street per the city specs. And so we're asking, staff recommends that the board of directors authorize the general manager to execute change order number 2 to the contract with RC Becker to increase the construction contract amount by $33,360.79 to a total of $338,360.79 for the Decoro Drive pavement repair project. And I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
All right. Before we go to board questions and discussion, Madam Secretary, do we have any public comment on this item?
We do not.
Very good. Director Armitage, you have your hand up.
Thank you. My question is pertains to the last sentence of the board member where it says remaining fund balance for this project exceeds $375,000. Are there other anticipated costs for this, or are we like way below budget with this project?
We'll be below budget. We don't anticipate anything else.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. I don't see any other hands up.
President Martin, Director Atkins has his hand
Director
up.
Director Atkins, yes, go ahead. Go ahead, BJ. You're muted. Oh.
I move the staff recommendation.
Okay, very good. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Seconded, Director Cooper.
Seconded by Director Cooper. Any other questions for Mr. Alford? Seeing none, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Armitage?
Yes.
Director Cooper?
Yes.
Director Osuchowski?
Yes.
Director Ford?
Yes.
Director Bronstein?
Yes.
Director Planbeck?
Yes.
Director Atkins?
Yes.
Director Kelly?
Yes.
Director Colley?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbach?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen?
Yes.
President Martin?
I will vote yes, but Mike, please pass along our appreciation to your staff member who caught the extra cost in their proposal that were able to be removed. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you. This item passes.
Very good.
Thank you all. Be safe.
All right. We move on to item 7.3, consider adoption of a resolution to enact stage one of the Water Shortage Contingency Plan and Water Conservation and Water Supply Shortage Ordinance. Our presenter tonight is Matt Dickens. Mr. Dickens.
Oh, good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening, President Martin. I apologize. I believe Sarah Fleury will be starting the presentation for us. I got a little lost there. Sarah, are you on the call?
I'm ready. Surprise.
At least one of us are.
Well, good evening, directors. Matt and I are going to be doing a co-presentation tonight, giving you an update on our water operating plan and the water conservation response actions. Next slide. So what we're going to talk about, I'm going to start talking about the water supply update, a quick update on the drought, statewide conditions, the precip and weather, and our 2022 operating plan. Matt's going to dive into the water conservation update with the regulatory update, conservation performance, and then demand response policy options. And then it's going to jump back to me to discuss the drought mitigation options. And we'll look at a portfolio stress test, the financial considerations, and mitigation impacts. And on the background of this slide, I'm showing you the variable polar jet stream, which is typical for a La Nina pattern. And just last month, NOAA reported that La Nina has strengthened. So now there's a 90% chance of La Nina weather patterns across the Pacific Northwest this winter through March, and then a 50% chance that that runs through the spring in May. And what you can see in the background is just that typically La Nina patterns tend to bring wetter conditions in the northern part of California and the northern states. But unfortunately, that tends to give us some drier conditions in Southern California. So just keep that in the back of your mind as we go through our plan. Next slide. So what I wanted to cover first was just a quick comparison of the first 2 years of this drought as it compares to the first 2 years of the 2014 drought. So in the top left-hand corner, you'll see two state of California maps, which are the drought classifications. At the beginning of the 2014 drought, which happened in the water year 2011-2012, you can see almost an all-white map of California, which means there was really no drought classification except for that little yellow portion, which is a little abnormally dry in southeastern California. And 2 years later, if you shift to the right one, in the beginning of the 13-14 water year, you can see the colors changed about three stages of an increase. And so we went from no drought classification to mostly a D2, which is a severe drought classification throughout the state. If we move to the right, I wanted to show kind of what's happened in the first 2 years of our 2021 drought. So this drought started the October 2019. That was the 2019-2020 water year. Again, you can see the state is basically free of any drought classification except for that bottom southeast corner. But 2 years later, this is what the drought classification map looked like at the beginning of this water year. So you can see that we've gone up almost 4 to 5 stages throughout the state, getting into those extreme and exceptional drought periods. So what's happening this go around is what they call a flash drought. It just happens a lot faster. And one thing to note is that the 2014 drought did last 5 years from start to finish. We don't know how long this drought would last, but assuming at this point for us to get out of it or just to kind of get some average runoff, we're going to need about 140% of average precipitation throughout the state of California just to get some kind of average runoff. So Again, just some information as we move into the next water year. Next slide, please. So overall, I just wanted to give statewide reservoir conditions. As I think a lot of you have heard, the reservoir conditions are extremely low. This is a bar graph on the right-hand side, which shows our major, some of the major reservoirs throughout the state. The bar shows you for each reservoir kind of what level you're at. And then the red line in each of those bar graphs indicates the historic levels that they should be at to date. And so this graphic was just released 2 days ago. And as you can see, some of those major reservoirs at the top, you have Shasta and Oroville. They're pretty far below that red line. So again, it took a few years for us to get to this point, but it is going to take more than just that big storm we had in October to get out. Next slide. What I wanted to show you was, in October, we had an epic atmospheric river. It was a level 5, that's as big as they get, came through California, and it made a significant impact. That was really a good storm to get in October. This is a graphic of the Lake Oroville reservoir levels. The blue indicates this year. The pink was 2019, and in Oroville, that was, we were pretty close to the top of the, filling the reservoir that year. And then the green indicates 2020 levels. So what you see kind of on that far right side is that nice step up in the Lake Oroville, and that was from that big atmospheric river. Next slide, please. Next, I wanted to show you a similar slide for the San Luis Reservoir. So the San Luis Reservoir is located south of the Delta. This reservoir is shared between DWR and the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation. And so again, in the far bottom corner, you can see that bump up from that October rain. So when this reservoir is full, it would be at the top of that, it would be topping out at that second dashed red line. So we have a really, really long ways to go. And that huge storm made a good impact, but we do have a long ways to go. Next slide. Next, I wanted to take a quick look at, what precipitation anomalies are when you get back-to-back La Nina years. So last year, we experienced the La Nina weather pattern, and we had a very, very dry season throughout the state and an extremely dry season in Santa Clarita. And we're moving into another La Nina year. And so what I've got in this graphic shows a comparison of historical back-to-back La Nina winters, and it compares the year one precipitation anomalies to the long-term average, and then does the same thing with the year two precipitation anomalies compared to average. And so on the left-hand side, you've got the year one La Nina. And what you see in this graphic in the northern section of Lake Oregon and Washington, you see a lot of blue colors. That indicates anywhere from 3 to 9 inches more rain in that La Nina year than the long-term average in those areas. If you go a little further south, the southern coast of California, you'll see it's a little yellow, and that indicates about anywhere from 0 to 3 inches less precipitation in that first La Nina year compared to the average. So that's kind of what we've just experienced. Moving into a second year of La Nina, you can see some more precipitation anomalies. So you still have those blue colors up north. So La Ninas definitely favor the northern states. But you can see California has a lot more of those yellows and orange colors, which indicate drier precipitation conditions. And mostly, unfortunately, in that southern coastal area. So just another source of information as we plan for next year's operating plan, but there's a lot of indications that it's going to continue to be dry for the next water year. Next slide. So for SEV's historical rainfall, this is a graphic which shows us our wettest year on record in blue, our average year of precipitation or average precipitation in green, and our driest year in red. And unfortunately, our last water year, we experienced the driest year on record. So the record that we broke was the 06-07 water year, where we had 4.8 inches total, and the 2021 water year ended at 3.4 inches. So we have a new low record. Next slide. But we have started a new water year. We got an epic atmospheric river and we did get some rain. So this is another graphic which shows the precipitation each month. I've got the water year from last year and the next water year. Last year's water year was in red, and you can see each month how much rain we got. The blue bars indicate this new water year. So you can see that October storm we got had a decent impact. And then the yellow bars for each month kind of give us where we should land as an average each month. So the good news is that we started out this water year good in Santa Clarita. We haven't had rain in October for the last 2 years, and we haven't met our October average for the last 9 years. So we went over the average for this year. So we started it good. Next slide. This slide gives us the 3 to 6 month precipitation forecast. On the left-hand side, you've got the 3 month, go back one. On the left-hand side, you've got the 3 month precipitation forecast from November to January. And in this map, the green colors indicate a probability of above average precipitation, and the brown colors indicate a probability of below average precipitation. So you'll see that Southern California area for the next 3 months is looking like it could be drier. So another indication it's going to be drier. On the right-hand graphic, this is the six-month precipitation forecast. And again, this is 6 months out. So, you know, hopefully these aren't extremely accurate, but this is what we have. And again, you see those brown colors throughout California indicating less than average precipitation expected. Next slide. And so in October, we went to the watershed, Water Resources and Watershed Committee, and did a a later version of this same presentation. It was based on an operating plan that was created with data from collected to the end of September. And a lot of things have changed. So I wanted to just give an example of what's changed. And that's kind of what we're going to be seeing in this presentation. So the graphic that you see here right now is the outcome of our operating plan for 2022 and 2023. Assuming that 2022, we have a 0% state water project allocation and a 5% allocation in 2023. And the bars that you're seeing indicate green indicates a surplus and red indicates a shortfall. So what we presented in October, we were seeing from the data that we put together that we would expect about a 90 acre foot shortage in 2022 at a 0% allocation. And in 2023, if it continued to be dry and we had a 5% allocation, we were expecting about 11,500 acre foot shortage. And if you could click one, April. A lot of things have changed since then. Some of the things, for example, we got a big rainstorm, which helped slow down those demands locally. When demands slow down, you know, less imported water is used. That allows for more carryover to be saved and used in our 2022 operating plan. We were also talking with Rosedale, and they were still preparing their preliminary recovery estimates for us. So in the October outlook, we were assuming only being able to get about 10,000 acre feet from Rosedale, because we didn't want to overestimate. We were being conservative. And we've got some updates that indicate we can get more from them. So the outlook has changed. And so on the right-hand side of the graph, you can see kind of our updated surplus and shortfall estimates. So with a 0% allocation in 2022, we think we'll end up with about 2,800 acre feet of surplus water. And we can use that water for the 2023 5% assumption, and it'll shorten our shortfall to about 1,500 acres overall. So that's kind of just a little look at some of the changes, and I'll get into more detail, but I wanted to just let you know things are moving fast and we're trying to keep up and adjust our operating plan as quickly as we can. Next slide. So this is the all dreaded operating plan graphic that we all love, and I'm going to walk through it slowly because I know some of the members of the board aren't as familiar with this as the Water Resources Committee. What I've got here is a table. It shows in red an estimate of our operating plan in 2022, what a 0% allocation, so what we would do. To the right of that, we've got a 5% allocation operating plan. The right of that, a 10% allocation operating plan. And then at the end there in orange, we've got an assumption of if it continues to stay dry, because Water Resources always kind of prepares for the worst scenario. If it continues to be dry, we think that the worst case scenario would be a 5% allocation, because 0% was never supposed to happen. So we're hoping it won't happen two times in a row, if it happens at all. But worst case scenario for 2023, this kind of lays out what we would do with our to meet our demands in 2023. So what we're going to do is walk through the red column. So our operating plan in 2022, if we end up with a 0% allocation, which is a likely, So we're going to start from the top and work our way down. So in 2022, we estimate that our demands will be about 71,000 acre feet. To meet those demands, first thing we look at is our groundwater supplies. We estimate we can get about 29,500 acre feet from our groundwater supplies. About 15,500 acre feet would come from the alluvial wells, and 14,000 acre feet from our Saugus wells. Below that, we also have a little bit of recycled water, our 450 acre feet of recycled water. If you move down one more column, you'll see that leaves an imported demand of about 41,150 acre feet. So we've used our local supplies. Now we're going to look at our imported supplies. The first thing we're going to look at is our state water project table A, and at a 0% allocation, we will have none of that. So zero there, but we do have our BVRRB water, or 11,000 acre feet of transfer water. We can definitely get that, so count that. Moving down in red, you'll see that leaves us short of imported supplies, about 30,150 acre feet. So when we're short, we then move into our dry year water supplies. The first place that we're going to look is our state water project carryover supplies. So this is table A water that we've been able to save up over the last few years and use in years like this. So we try to keep some sort of a balance of our carryover supplies in case we really need it, like we will if we have a 0% allocation. With the updated information that we've got from October, we think we're going to be around 12,000 acre feet of carryover supplies. So that's going to be great to have. Moving down, we think we can get about 15,000 acre feet from our Rosedale banking program. One more down, that's our semi-tropic banking program. We can take our 5,000 acre feet from that. Moving one more down, we can get about 1,000 acre feet from our Yuba Accord agreement. And so we don't anticipate needing to use any of that flexible storage. We will have that all filled back up by the end of the year. So we'll have that in case of an emergency. And at the end of the year, at the bottom there, we anticipate having about 2,850 acre feet of surplus, or, you know, there'll be a little bit of carryover water left over in case 2023 is dry as well. So this kind of lays out those operating plans and the details in the slides. I don't know how much more I can go back and do more if you want, but overall, if we're assuming a 0% allocation in 2022 and we have a 5% allocation in 2023, we think that we would end up, if you walk down the operating plan Our conservative estimate is that we would end up with about 1,500 acre foot shortage, and we would need to use all of our flexible storage supply as well. So this kind of gives you an update of where some of those numbers are coming from. Next slide. I was going to say too, you know, considering that some of the conditions that we're experiencing, our water supply portfolio is really, I think, doing a good job at meeting all these challenges. These are unprecedented times, and it's amazing at what our portfolio has been able to do. But there is a lot of uncertainty still out there. You know, as we saw, we did this presentation a few weeks ago, so much has changed. And so some of those things that are uncertain, you know, with our Rosedale banking program, any water over 10,000 acre feet that we recover is second priority water. And so, you know, conditions could change. This water is not guaranteed. They said they can give it to us, but, you know, it's second priority as well. So we're hoping that that's true. With regard to some of our alluvial supplies, there's some uncertainty with the PFAS response levels. As those response levels go up, we've seen those wells go off. This year, some of the response levels at wells have gone down enough that we can utilize some of that water again. So we don't know if those response levels are going to stay down, if they're going to go up. We don't know what's going to happen. So there's a little uncertainty there. With regards to purchasing water or exchanging water, there was a very minimal supplies in 2021. It was a very dry season. And so we're just uncertain right now at what will be available in 2022 if we did need to purchase or exchange water. We're still looking at that as some options, but nothing has been finalized. And if we were to purchase water, it would be very expensive with the conditions that we're facing. With regards to demand variations and conservation, you know, we're hoping that customers will respond to the call to conservation, but there's always a chance that they might take a while for them to do that. And with regards to state mandated conservation, you know, the state could do some more things. We are not sure yet. And then weather is kind of uncertain as well. So there's a lot of things to kind of juggle, but as all these things kind of come to fruition and move on out, we'll just keep updating that operating plan and adjust our estimates as we can. And next slide, I think it's time to hear from Matt about the water conservation updates.
Thank you, Sarah. That was very elucidating and insightful. Matt Dickens again, Sustainability Manager at CV Water. My portion of tonight's presentation will cover water conservation updates, which include a regulatory overview, conservation performance, and demand response policy discussion. I'd like to note at this point that there are updates to the presentation that we provided to the SCV Water, Water Resources, and Watershed Committee on October 13th, 2021. As Sarah mentioned, this is a dynamic situation. And due to the fluidity of it, we are following and monitoring very closely. And these presentations will certainly are subject to change based off of those changing conditions. Next slide, please. So currently, when we turn to regulatory updates, we're going to first look at the governor's emergency declarations and proclamations. The first one occurred on April 21st, 2021, which included Mendocino and Sonoma counties. On May 10th, the governor extended the drought emergency declaration to cover 41 counties in total. On July 9th, the governor's third iteration of the drought emergency declaration, it was extended to 50 counties and included a 15% voluntary conservation call compared to 2020's consumption levels, and that was for all Californians. However, at that time, LA County and most of the southern counties in California were not included in the drought emergency declaration. In addition to the July 9th voluntary conservation call, the State Water Resources Control Board started collecting data and reporting on urban water supplier performance relative to that 2020 15% voluntary conservation call. On October 19th, the fourth iteration of the governor's drought emergency proclamation was declared, which extended the drought emergency declaration to all counties, including Los Angeles and Ventura counties, of which SCB Water is situated. In addition to the call for voluntary conservation compared to 2020, amongst other things, the October 19th proclamation included a component or provision that directs urban water suppliers to execute their urban water shortage contingency plans at a level appropriate to local conditions that takes into account the possibility of a third consecutive dry year. In addition to that, the extension of the drought emergency declaration, the direction to execute the water shortage contingency plan, and then another component was that the governor directed the State Water Resources Control Board to start evaluating mandatory conservation measures that it may implement or adopt to help the state meet the 15% conservation call. So turning to SCB Water, our water shortage contingency plan and the water conservation and water supply shortage ordinance, both adopted by the board of directors in June, currently is inactive. There's no shortage declaration. However, we do have sustained active conservation program levels. Those are things that we do on a year-to-year basis that are connected to our SBX 7-7 targets and currently our interim conservation targets, which I'll go over shortly. And then we will be moving into a new framework in next year, once DWR and the State Water Resource Control Board releases its standards and methodologies. However, the agency has been proactive. Since May, we have been working with our SWAT team, which is the Sustainable Water Action Task Force, which includes other public agencies and partners, to communicate drought information and engagement to our customers and to our stakeholders, as well as our communication engagement team have done an excellent job of getting information out to the public to inform them about the drought and then ways and means to conserve water. Next slide, please. So turning to our interim conservation target, as I mentioned before, in 2010, the state, in 2009, the state of California legislature passed SBX 7-7, which created a 20% reduction in gallon per capita day by 2020. That SBX 7-7 sunset December 31st of 2020. We did comply with that target. We actually surpassed it by about 4.5%. And so for our interim target, we're looking at continuation of 2% reduction in gallon per capita a year until we get to the new conservation long-term framework, which starts next year. Recognizing that every gallon that we save and that we can capture and gain traction on is gallons that will go towards our benefit for our urban water use objectives in the future. So when I turn to this chart, what we show here is our the black dashed line is what our population, 2021 population, its water consumption would look like if it were using the 274 gallons per person per day baseline that was established as part of SBX 7-7. The dotted line shows our essentially our 22% by 2021 target, and then the bar chart shows us our monthly production. What's important to note here is that for the first half of the year, we were slightly above or at that interim conservation target, although beginning in July, we started to fall underneath that target and gain some traction. Year to date, we are only 0.2% over our 22% by 2021 target, which is about 96 or 97 acre feet. Next slide, please. However, the governor's voluntary conservation call looks at 15% of 2020 levels. So that means that every month we're shooting to be 15% of what we used in 2020. So that changes the benchmark, or that changes the metrics of which we use to measure performance. Although it's important to note that that didn't occur until July 9th or July 8th, around that time. However, when we look at this chart, the blue bars show us 2020's consumption, the brown bars show us 2021's production, and the black dashed line shows us 15% reduction of 2020 levels. We have been over for most months our 2020 production levels, although we will see, and I'll explain more in detail shortly, that our production, we broke through the 2020 barrier in October. And although we did not achieve our 15% voluntary reduction target. Next slide, please. So again, as I mentioned before, the State Water Resources Control Board is reporting by-month conservation for all urban water suppliers that meet the criteria. It also looks at hydrologic regions and statewide. So for SCV water, you can see July, August, September, and October. I have provided August number because that's what the State Water Resources Control Board has reported thus far. So when we looked at August, we were 3.1%. So SCV water was 3.1% over our 2020 production levels. Cumulatively, we were over 4.1%. South Coast, which is the hydrologic region where we are recording with our fellow agencies, their production was 3.1% below, and their cumulative production and consumption was down 1.7%. Statewide conservation was at 5% and cumulative 3.5%. I will note that while that's certainly outside or higher than what we saw on the South Coast and in this whole state, it's not astronomical or it's not anomalous. It's within range of what we would expect for our region. So in September, we were up 1.1% compared to September 2020, or 3.3% cumulative. And in October, we dropped to 11.3% of 2020's levels and brought our cumulative total down to only plus 0.1%. So what that shows is that we are certainly seeing increased gains in conservation month to month, which is probably the result of our conservation activities, cooler temperatures, the governor's extension of the drought emergency declaration, and the late breaking storm that we had in October. Next slide, please. This chart shows us a different kind of frame. Again, it's all helpful to look at this data in various different formats and frames of reference so we can kind of determine where these trends are. 1 month is definitely a valuable and valid data point. Multiple months, we start to gain trends. So in this case, what we're seeing here is monthly difference is the blue line, and the orange line is cumulative difference. The gray dashed line at 100% means either plus or minus compared 2020's production compared to 2021. And then the shaded area shows the governor's 15% voluntary conservation call compliance period when that began. So early in the year, we saw some really wide variations and increase in local consumption versus last year. And that was the result of the absence of rain and increased hotter temperatures. Although when we turn towards the second part of the year, particularly after the governor's 15% call and as SCV Water started taking proactive conservation engagement measures, we started to see our traction start to head down from 5 to 4, cumulative 5, 4, 3 to only 0.1, whereas our month-to-month conservation went from 5, 3, 1% over down to 11.3% below. So again, showing that we're heading in the right direction, although we still have additional conservation to obtain in order to meet those 15% voluntary targets. Next slide, please. Okay, so turning to how do we take this information and start to conduct a policy analysis? And the conservation group and water resources group looked at a criterion analysis matrix to identify four different options. Those options are listed across the top. We've got maintain the status quo, which is essentially our proactive, informal drought engagement. We have option B, which is activate a stage one of the water shortage contingency plan and water conservation and water shortage ordinance. We have option C, which would be a board resolution supporting voluntary stage two, essentially enacting the voluntary components of the water shortage contingency plan stage two, not enacting the mandatory components in the ordinance. And then option D is activate stage two. And then when we look at the criterion, we can see is that documented in alignment with the water shortage contingency plan, whether yes or no, and if it's voluntary, it's kind of partial. We can determine if it's water conservation or water shortage ordinance. Option A is no, B we would say yes, C, no, and D, yes. I will just read the options and you guys can see the data that we have here. Does it require board of directors action? Is it voluntary or mandatory or a mixture? What would be the impacts on demand? And those are based off of our experience, but also our trending analysis and what was documented in the water shortage contingency plan. Does the option align with the 15% voluntary conservation call? That ranges from no to partial to yes to partial. You may ask why, for example, does the board resolution that doesn't create mandatory conservation align? Well, because the governor's proclamation calls for voluntary conservation. So you can see how it's partial. However, we asked, does it align with anticipated future regulatory requirements? And the range is from no to partial to yes. And then finally, does it communicate urgency, which certainly is a mechanism, an important instrument that the board and the role the board plays in communicating to the public the urgency and the need for conservation and water use efficiency. Next slide, please. So once we did a criterion analysis matrix, we went through a SWOT analysis, which essentially identifies different components of each policy option, understanding strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. I won't read through all of these, but you'll see that in this case, for example, the status quo, which is maintain proactive engagement with voluntary conservation. It communicates supply reliability, emphasizes voluntary conservation, and is currently in production. Those are some strengths, but obviously each policy has weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Next slide, please. Regarding stage one of the shortage contingency plan and the water conservation and water shortage ordinance, again, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. The strengths of the stage one is that it formally enacts the water shortage contingency plan and water conservation and water supply shortage ordinance. It communicates urgency. It focuses primarily on education and prohibitions on water waste. That's clearly what the ordinance prescribes. And it increases demand reduction progress. Again, the board can see the various different points or policy points or considerations of each of the components of the SWOT analysis. Next slide, please. If we turn to option C, we're looking strengths include communicates water supply reliability, adds formality, communicates urgency, focuses primarily on education and voluntary conservation, and it increases demand reduction progress. The weakness is that instead of prohibiting water waste measures, which may be a critical component of our water shortage contingency plan and our strategy moving forward based off of SARA's analysis and what our demands look like, it relies on the customer service policy to engage with specific types of water waste, where we should be communicating that to the community. Water running down the gutter during a drought, especially one flash drought with this type of intensity, is not a beneficial use of water, nor would it be at any time. Next slide, please. And then finally, when we turn to our stage two, the water shortage contingency plan and the water conservation water shortage ordinance, our strengths is that it formally enacts water shortage contingency plan and the ordinance. It aligns with the governor's 15% 2020 voluntary conservation target, communicates urgency, focuses primarily on education and prohibitions on water waste, and it does increase demand reduction progress. Although I would note that the weaknesses here, it's decreased alignment with voluntary conservation messaging and that it goes beyond the prohibiting water waste measures and instead extends into irrigation practices. And while those certainly may be something that we need to consider in the future, going into the winter, it would have, I believe it would have the, you know, those types of restrictions on irrigation water in the wintertime would have very little effect. Certainly a strategic time to and timing for that type of policy would be around or escalation of the shortage plan and ordinance would be around February when we see operators starting to and customers start to turn on their irrigation systems again. I think at this point in time, the stage one is optimal in that it primarily, again, focuses on water waste, prohibiting water waste measures. Next slide, please. With that, I'll be happy to pass it over to Sarah, and then I will be available for questions following the presentation.
Thank you, Matt. So now that we have all of these options ahead of us, you know, with regards to mitigating this drought, what are we looking at? With the operating plan, we have options for alternate water resources with water purchases, water exchanges if needed. We have water conservation options, voluntary and mandatory, or we have a hybrid version of that, which we could combine a water purchase or exchange with some additional increased conservation as well. Next slide. So to help make these decisions, as we're looking at our operating plan, and again, we really try to be conservative as we're looking at next year's operating plan. But in addition to that, we try to make sure that we are aligning ourselves to meet demands in 2022, but also position the agency so that if 2023 continues to be a worst case scenario and continues to be dry, our shortage or potential shortage situation isn't too extreme. We're being conservative about that. So we operate 2022 in order to make sure we're positioned well in 2023. And we do that every single year because you just don't know what's going to happen next year. So what we did was we put our portfolio to a stress test. You can see I've got the demands for each year at the top there. And then there's a lot of information on here. So we're going to start with the kind of the red, orange, and yellow scenarios. So what we have here are three scenarios, worst, bad, and still bad. What allocation scenarios we assume to happen in 2022 to 2023. So, and then do we have a shortage or surplus for 2022 and in 2023 as well? So we'll go across the top of the red one. So the worst case scenario that we can think of would be a 0% allocation in 2022. And then another 0% allocation in 2023. If that were to be the case, based on the supplies that we have and the plan operating plan that we have for both years, we would anticipate a surplus of water of about 2,800 acre feet in 2022. But the shortage in 2023 would be around 6,000 acre feet, which is a pretty decent sized shortage. The next scenario is a bad scenario. If we went from a 0% allocation next year to a 5% allocation in 2023, and this is what was presented to you in the big operating plan graphic that I showed. So a 2,800 acre foot surplus in 2022 and about a 1,500 acre foot shortage in 2023. And then a still bad scenario in yellow would be a 5% allocation and then another 5% allocation. And it's a little sad that that looks like a pretty good scenario at this point, but it is still bad. So if that were the case, we would see, we would anticipate about 7,600 acre feet surplus in 2022 based on the supplies we have available. And then about a 3,200 acre foot surplus in 2023. So again, our water supply portfolio is pretty tough and it can handle some pretty bad situations. But knowing that we're not exactly sure what's going to happen in 2023 and the potential for shortages is out there, we have some alternative water resources and conservation estimates listed below in the blue section. So there's an option to purchase or exchange about 5,000 acre feet that could give us more supply in 2022, increasing that surplus for 2023. And then Matt's options, the status quo, if we continue with the outreach that we've been doing, we anticipate we're going to get about 3,600 acre feet savings on our estimated demands. If we activate stage one, option B, we estimate about a 5,000 acre foot savings in 2022 demands. Voluntary stage two, would give us about 7,000 acre foot of savings from demands. And if we activate stage two, we anticipate up to 11,000 acre feet of savings. Next slide. But there are some financial considerations to take in as well. So with droughts, you do end up with some potential short-term revenue losses. And we have a really rough estimate of around $970 per acre foot. But we do have a $6 million reserve available for these types of revenue losses. And again, this is short-term revenue losses. The drought will not last forever. The next thing that we need to consider is the cost of our dry year program. So in the operating plan, you saw that we will need to access basically all of our dry year programs. And we see that as being around costing about $2.9 million. But we do have a $4 million firming budget each year to access these supplies if needed. So we're covered there. If there were additional dry year transfers or exchanges needed, that additional 5,000 acre feet that we talked about, that could exceed our existing firming budget because, again, that additional water is going to be more expensive. With regards to additional water conservation activities, conservation is a really cost-effective alternative at this point. There are costs associated with more outreach and rebate programs and potential enforcement. So those are all things to consider. Next slide, please. With regards to the 2022 dry year program cost, this is a table which just outlines each supply, the amount of water that we would get from those programs and the cost per acre foot. So you can see, for example, our Rosedale banking recovery, we anticipate using about 15,000 acre feet from that program at $80 an acre foot. So that's around $1.2 million. Semi-tropic water is a bit more expensive at $250 an acre foot. And then the Yuba Accord water, again, more expensive because we've had multiple dry years. But the total cost at the end of all of those supplies would be about $2.9 million. And again, any kind of spot market transfers, water purchases, if we went out on the market, we think would be about about $1,000 an acre foot, possibly more. So looking at the cost of our current programs, these are looking pretty affordable in consideration as what could be out there on that spot market transfer, spot market transfers. Next slide, please. So we come back to that surplus and shortfall graphic. And I've tried to lay it out in a pretty easy way to understand, but we'll walk through it as well. So this is looking at surpluses and shortfalls for each of the options, assuming an operating plan with a 0% allocation for 2022 and a 5% allocation in 2023. So we'll start with the red section A. If we continue with the status quo, we assume that 2,900 acre foot surplus in 2022, we can apply that to 2023 and we'd end up with about a 1,500 acre foot shortage. If we go to the yellow section, which is to purchase or exchange more water, about 5,000 acre feet, that would give us a surplus of about 7,900 acre feet in 2022 and a 3,500 acre foot surplus in 2023. Option B, which Matt presented, implementing conservation at the 10% level, which is what staff recommends, would give us about 10,000 acre feet of surplus in 2022 in our operating plan, we hope. And then an additional 12,000 to 13,000 acre foot surplus in 2023. And as we do operating plans, like I said, that carryover water is very essential to have available, just not knowing what could happen the next year. And that 10,000 acre foot range is really the sweet spot to be in. So that is one reason why this is staff's recommendation. Option C and D in purple, implementing conservation at a 15% level would give us about 13,500 surplus in 2022 and even more so in 2023. And then there's the hybrid version at the end there, which is a combination of a purchase and exchange of 5,000 acre feet with additional 10% conservation savings. And so you can see the surpluses for the operating plan in that scenario. Next slide, please. So staff's recommendation this evening is to consider the adoption of a resolution to enact stage one of the water shortage contingency plan and stage one of the water conservation and water supply shortage ordinance. And that's the end of our presentation, and Matt and I will be happy to answer any questions that you have at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah, and thank you, Matt, for the informative presentation. We need to ask for public comment before we can open up to board questions, answers, discussion. Madam Secretary, do we have any public comment on item 7.3?
It does not appear that we do.
Very good. So we will go to board questions and discussion. Director Cooper.
Thank you, President Martin. I want to commend staff on the presentation that they've put together, both here and at Water Resources. They've done a tremendous job in identifying our supplies and looking to the future and where this drought is heading. I think staff's recommendation is right on target. I think that's where we should be going. It's one of those things that as this drought, if it moves on and continues on, we can always ramp up. We can change it. But I think if we go too far at the start, I think people lose confidence in their water supply. And we've pumped a lot of money over the years, the last few decades, in putting these water programs together. And this is exactly what they're for, these dry year water sources that we've established. So I think at this point, staff's recommendation is really the direction that we need to go. Use the programs that we've put in place. If things change farther down, we come back and we make changes then. But thank you, Sarah, Matt Stone, and the rest of staff that have worked on this. Excellent report, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, Director Cooper. Director Planbeck, go ahead.
Yes, I'm fine with starting out with number one and ramping up, but I think we ought to, at this point, have monthly evaluations on this, because if this continues and we have no rain, we may want to go to two still this year. And I have to say that I've been discouraged because statewide, the messaging has been there's problems. And, you know, I've said before that we should be taking advantage of that to have people begin to understand that they need to conserve, even though we have the reserves. There's still an issue of all the fish are dying and the rivers up north to supply these reserves. And if we can help not by not using so much, that would help the whole state. And so I am glad that we're moving forward on this. I do want to also add that in addition to wanting to hear about this again next month to see if we are all right, is I'm concerned about this one statement in the resolution about whereas per capita consumption has been reduced by more than 20% compared to 210 levels. Now, I understand why you put that in there, that we were supposed to meet that and it did get reduced. But I think any member of the public that reads that is going to be very confused. If we've already reduced by 20%, why are we having to do this? So I understand why you wanted to say that, but I would recommend that you take that whereas out, because I think it makes it confusing. So anyway, that's all I had to say. And those were absolutely excellent presentations. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Director Planback. Director Bronstein.
Thank you so much for that presentation, and kudos to Sarah, who has sat with me through many conversations. I understood all the charts that she showed. That was awesome. I was really, really excited. I'm like, ooh, I get this, everything. I was wondering if there's predictions, though, for 2024, if that is also a 5% allocation, and what that would look like, and if it would be in our interest to be more prudent about our water, and if we think that, you know, it could, we could still be in a drought in 2 years as well.
You know, I'm always thinking further and further out, worst case scenario, dun dun dun. Okay. I think that the plan that we have for 2022 kind of outlines the supplies that are available and how our portfolio works. With regards, when we go to 2023, we're seeing that we're a little more conservative. For example, the Rosedale supply was back at 10,000 acre feet for that year, because we're just not sure what Rosedale will be able to provide to us. So that's kind of the conservative estimate. And as we move to 2024, our supply base would be the same. It's kind of, as you get further out, we're looking at, you know, are we using our flexible storage, and are we able to pay it back? How much can we take from our banking programs? And we do still have a healthy supply of water in the banking programs. So those limits of what we can take each year are basically the same as what's outlined in 2023. But if you include all of the conservation efforts that our customers can do, that really helps so much. You know, our supplies are being maxed out. So there's, we're getting to that point as we move into 2023 in that worst case scenario that, you know, we're pushing our limits. As you see in those really bad scenarios, we get to some of those shortages. And so the same thing, I think, would happen. It would exacerbate as we get on and on. So that's kind of why we take this year. We look at, okay, we need to operate conservatively to make sure we're okay if it's bad next year. And we would do the same once we get to the end of 2022. We'll kind of make sure that we're operating and making decisions in 2023 in case it gets bad again in 2024. So
thank you. And thank you so much for all that explanation, like in the past.
You're welcome.
Completely. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Director Armitage.
Thank you. First, I want to say that the collaboration that's taking place between the water resources team and the conservation team is very apparent, and I want to commend that. I do have a question for Sarah. In the slide you showed us about the stress test, what is the assumption for the length of time that we're in those stages? Is it like a 1 year, like we're in it for the full year?
The assumption was that we would purchase water, that the purchasing of water would happen in 2022 only. And then we could make that decision again in 2023. When it comes to conservation, we're assuming that we would get that amount of savings. So far, I think it was the 10% was around 7,000 acre feet of savings for 2022. And that savings would roll over and happen again in 2023. If we stay at that level.
Okay. Stay in a stage one, for instance, for that whole year.
We would anticipate about 7,000 acre feet for each year from those programs.
Thank you. And then my next question is for Matt. So in section 4 of the ordinance, FNG require work on the behalf of the builders and the city, because it has to do with implementing the model landscaping ordinance, right, for F. And then for G, it pertains to, I think, watering the medians, if I remember correctly. How does that communication happen? Because I understand how the communication is going to happen with our regular ratepayers and customers, but how does the communication with the builders and the city happen?
Thank you, Director Armitage. It's a great question. In terms of, I think you're referencing Section 4F. Is that right?
F and G, yes. Yes.
So irrigation of with potable water of landscapes outside of newly constructed homes and buildings in a manner inconsistent with regulations and other requirements established by the California Building Standards Commission. Essentially, this is premised in the Model Water Efficient Landscape Ordinance, which begins at the permitting level. And so it would be up to us to look at those projects that had been permitted under the current iteration of the Model Water Efficient Landscape Ordinance to ensure that they're using water that's in compliance with those standards, or they're building or maintaining their landscapes in compliance with those standards.
Okay. I mean, that should be happening anyways, right?
It is. Yeah,
Yeah,
essentially it's saying that you know, it's putting into this restriction, I guess, which we took from the previous droughts restrictions from the State Water Resource Control Board. It puts those into practice so that we have a mechanism to work with those permitting agencies and make sure they're permitting at the Model Water Efficient Landscape Ordinance.
Okay. Thanks. And I'll just close by saying that option B, or the stage one, also makes the most sense to me as a starting point, something that we can build off of as well if and when we need to. So thank you.
Thank you, Director Armitage. Director Ford.
Thank you, President Martin. It was a great presentation at the Water Resources and Watersheds Committee, and I'm grateful that Sarah and Matt had an opportunity to update it with current information. A couple of questions for them that they can answer in turn. Sarah, have you identified on the hybrid version or the water purchase and exchange of 5,000 acre feet a likely program that we would participate in? And then the governor has said that we'd like to have 15% water savings. The stage one will stipulate a 10% water saving. Would we still ask our customers to shoot for a 15% goal consistent with what the state is asking for? And then the last thing is the staff report didn't have the committee's recommendation with regard to moving forward. If in the future, if we could make sure that whatever the committee decided was reflected in your report, that would be a good thing. So those are my three questions. Whichever one of you would like to answer each one, please do. Thank you.
I'll start off with the looking into a purchase or exchange of 5,000 acre feet. We have moved forward with that. We do have some options available that are much more favorable than those spot market transfer prices. And so we are still gathering information, but it's looking positive that we will have some good options for that if needed.
Great. And I'll follow up, Sarah. Thank you. And Director Ford, I'll answer the second question, but I may ask for clarification on the third question. On the second question pertaining to having a stage one up to 10% voluntary conservation with those water waste restrictions, we certainly would want to maintain communicating to the public that voluntary conservation of 50% is a target. We're required to report that to the board. We think that messaging coupled with that stage one activation of the plan and the ordinance will move us in the direction of getting towards that goal. Regarding the third question, I was looking at the staff report and was I misunderstanding, or did I mishear that there was no recommendation in the staff report regarding the committee's recommendation, or did I just mishear that, sir?
Yeah, Matt, I didn't see one. Normally, as a standard practice, maybe I missed it. Like what the committee did is usually reported out. Did you do that and I missed it, or?
Yeah. I see. I think you're saying specifically that the committee had moved to option C and that the staff recommendation had modified as a result of, I think there, we could add clarification that to say what the committee recommended and then add what new events and information came up that modified staff recommendations. I can certainly add that in future step reports.
That would be perfect. Moving forward. So thank you, Matt.
What did the staff recommend? I mean, the committee recommend?
The committee recommended option C, although this was not a unanimous decision. It was just a consensus to go for the voluntary water conservation of 15%.
Yeah, and I think the other couple of factors that staff tried to touch on in the report, Director Planback, where there were conditions that continue to change between when the committee considered it and when we brought this to the board. And that was, I think, something that was acknowledged in the discussion that might be the case.
Well, I think Mr. Ford, Director Ford, makes a good point that when the state is recommending 15 and stage one only recommends 10, that could, you know, I think we have to be careful about not confusing the public and being consistent with what is recommended at state level. And I also don't think this stuff is not going to get better. So I think it's important for consistency in our messaging.
All right, let's take the next director question. Director Collins.
Yeah, thank you. So first, let me, the presentation, I really appreciate the fact that it was integrated, putting the conservation and supply and finance information all in the same presentation, because we as a board, we really need to be considering all of those factors. And so when we presented them in a coherent briefing, it really does help. One, and this is not intended to be super critical, but I am a little uncomfortable calling some of this water surplus. That implies, I don't know, surplus is something which I don't think that it is accurately called when it's really just leaving some water in water banks and that sort of thing. So if we can work on a different terminology than calling not using the maximum possible water and leaving some of it in the bank, to not call that surplus. I want to echo Director Ford's question. The committee very much, as a consensus, said option C. And to leave that out of the presentation here to the board, I think is really a problem. I'm not sure why we would not want to at least encourage folks to do the things that we would mandate them doing under stage two. I don't know why we would drop that. I would think that we would be using those suggestions in our messaging anyway. So I don't know why we're not doing option C and recommending that customers do the conservation that they can, most customers can do relatively painlessly, that are called for under the stage two. And so finally, my preference is, at this point, to go to stage two, because the water we use now, it's gone. It's gone forever. And we're drawing it out of banks and those sorts of things that, you know, we may want that water back in another year or two. And when that's kind of the idea of a savings account, is that you draw on it conservatively, and most people do, in order to maximize the ability for that savings account to endure well into the future. So I would really prefer to go to stage two at this point, but I was a minority voice at the committee level. Thank you.
And there we go. Thank you, Director Pally. Director Ozahusky.
Yeah, lots of moving parts here. Conservation, you know, definitely saves water, but it reduces revenue, which prevents us from purchasing water if we need it. Mr. Stone, a question for you. Our dry year water supplies, Rosedale, Semi-Tropic, Yuba, when are those programs, supplies, what year were they planned? No, not built, not executed, but what year were they started to be talked about? How about that?
Yeah, they would each be different, and probably off the cuff, I couldn't tell you exact.
Just approximate. Were they in response to a certain drought?
Semi-Tropic was the first of the three to be out there. And then Rosedale, and I think the Yuba water came through another kind of a different settlement format than a water banking format. And I see Dirk is looking like he might be ready with Captain Banking answers.
Hey, Dirk, can you answer that?
So the Rosedale banking program, the negotiations for that were probably in the early to mid 2000s, so maybe 2004 to 2006, and implemented 2007. That's about the same time I had sort of Buena Vista Rosedale supply. The initial, we had an initial program with Semi-Tropic for like tier two supplies, and that was in that had a very short time frame, but it was implemented 2003, the first time, I believe. And then we had our dry year, our current program was negotiated 2014 and brought online 2016, 2017.
Okay, the 2014-2016 program, what's the name of that one, Dirk?
That's a Semi-Tropic Stored Water Recovery Unit. That's our firm 5,000 acre feet from Semi-Tropic.
And was that in response to the drought in 2013?
Yes, it was. And that program was also partially funded by a Prop 84 grant, okay. as were the recovery wells for our Rosedale Bank.
All right, understood. Yeah, with PFAS in our groundwater, I'm sure that threw a huge wrench in our supplies. Dirk, are there any projects looking out right now where we're going to bank somewhere else, some other large quantity of water? And this is not to mention the wells that are being built at Rosedale. Are there plans to buy more land or store more water in other areas?
We are investigating participation in a water bank in the Antelope Valley East Kern Water District. It's their high desert water bank. It's close to where the West Branch and the East Branch of the Aqueduct bifurcate. That program, we'd be looking at doing some of the preliminary planning in 2022, probably be online in the sometime after 2025, but before 2030.
And how many acres feet are we hoping to get from that?
We're looking anywhere from a recovery from 10,000 to 20,000. Of course, depending on what our needs are and what other investments we make. We're also participating in the planning for the site's reservoir. That'll be coming to the committee. And our continued participation in the planning efforts will be coming to the committee in December and to the board probably in January or February. And our participation in that is at a 5,000 acre foot level, kind of on an average basis. Less during wet periods when we're storing water, more during dry periods when we would be recovering water.
Okay, understood. Thank you, Mr. Marks. Ms. Flory, if you can go back to slide 11 on your presentation, can you just briefly explain to me again the huge change. I mean, we went from that October watershed meeting where things were looking really, really grim to the November outlook. Can you go over that slide again, please? You're on mute.
Oh, sorry, April, are you able to bring that back up? I can explain some of the changes. So one of the big changes that happened between September and October was the fact that demands decreased so much from September to October. So we had the amount of water that we were estimating for carryover supplies, and I believe it was around 9,000 acre feet in the 2022 operating plan. And with the amount of water that we're bringing in currently from our banking programs, we're able to kind of back off on that table A supply and save some of that for carryover. So we went from assuming about 9,000 acre feet of carryover supply to 12,000 acre feet of carryover supply. So that's a 3,000 acre foot difference. In addition to that, we had an assumption that we would have about 10,000 acre feet of water available in 2022 from our Rosedale program. And in the updated version for 2022, we've shifted that to 15,000 acre feet available. So that's another 5,000 acre feet of supply that is a difference from our October report. And then one last change that we made, as Matt showed you, we're starting to see that trend that conservation from our customers is taking hold. And so in the October presentation, the demands that we started with were a bit higher than the demands that we're seeing right now in our operating plan. So we shifted that down a little bit because I guess we start from the demands from this year. So in 2021, we assumed about 70,000 acre feet of demands, but because of the changes we're seeing in demands kind of as we get to the end of the year, we know we're going to be less than 70,000 acre feet, and we're trying to kind of estimate as conservatively as we can, you know, where are we going to end at the end of this year and assume about a 3% increase next year. So we did a little bit of a shift with regards to our demands as well. And so that's kind of that big change that you see from, we went from about 90 acre feet of shortage in 2022 in October to about 2,800 acre feet of not surplus, but water that's left over for next year that we can use in 2023. And in the original October outlook, we also were utilizing our flexible storage in 2022. In the updated version, we were able to leave our flexible storage, save it in case we need it in 2023. So there's about a 6,000 acre foot shift there as well. I don't think in our operating plan we had to use all of it in October, but we did use a portion of it. So there's multiple factors, and I know the numbers look funky, but I promise they do add up, and I'd be happy to go through that with you a little bit more. I worried about that when I presented this, but there are multiple factors that went into these shifts.
No, I understand.
It's a huge shift
from October, yeah. And mm-hmm. also, when you mentioned secondary priority water not guaranteed for Rosedale banking, can you explain that?
So at the Rosedale Water Bank, we have a first priority access to our DRP wells that were completed in 2019. And so originally in the agreement, as it was put together earlier on, Rosedale thought that we could get a certain amount of water from their program. And when we got to the 2014 drought, it turned out that a lot of the supplies that they thought would be available for us, they really weren't available. And so that's kind of what initiated the development of those additional wells to kind of firm up some of that capacity that we need in the dry years. So for the updated version, we know we can get about 10,000 acre feet of firm supply from that program each year. Anything above that, the agreement allows us to get up to 20,000 acre feet a year. And as you've seen in the last couple years, we've been pulling quite a bit of water from our Rosedale program. I think in 2020, it was about just under 15,000 acre feet of exchange water that we pulled from that program. This year, we're looking to get about almost 18,000 acre feet from that program. So we can get up to 20,000, 10,000 of it is firm. And then the other second priority water comes from other pumping that Rosedale has. If other partners aren't using that, then we get to utilize that. So that's kind of where it comes in as second priority. And Rosedale has let us know that a lot of the commitments that they needed to make this year, which limit that second priority water, they won't have to do that next year. So we've been taking advantage of that second priority water as much as we can. And luckily that will continue into next year.
Okay. And then last question on slide 28, when we go over the financials and potential prices for water. With our dollar not being as strong and potentially losing value, are we comfortable that these prices will stay, these prices throughout 2022 and maybe 2023, or will they change drastically?
These prices will stay pretty consistent. The Rosedale banking recovery, most of the costs that you see there are electrical costs, and we benefit from the ag electrical rate. When we pump water in the off season, we pay a little bit more in the summertime, but because there are wells that we're pulling water from, it's pretty cheap in comparison. With regards to the semi-tropic program, that does go up a little bit each year. That's a combination of treatment that they do for arsenic when they pull that water out of the ground, and then the electrical costs. And so that may go up a tiny bit, but it stays within that range. Again, having the ability to pull water in the off seasons, they're also get the ag rates. So it kind of averages out to about $250. And then with regards to the Yuba Accord, that's actually a set price in the agreement for critically dry years or consecutive critical dry years. That's our firm cost for that water for the next 5 years. So that will not change.
Okay. And the transfer costs? That'll
stay those prices are based on some of the agreements that we're already seeing for next year, just kind of giving us an idea of what water will cost if we go out on the open market and try to purchase water from other agencies. The drier it gets, the more agencies are going to need water and farmers are going to need water. And so the prices for that water go up drastically. Again, we, based on what we presented to the committee in October, we talked about that hybrid version where we would look at potential transfer or exchange of 5,000 acre feet just to kind of give us some padding. And we have been researching that with that, kind of seeing what's out there. And we're working with some of our partners right now to potentially utilize our Rosedale banking program. And we think that we have some positive news to share, but we don't really have that finalized yet. So I don't want to get too into detail about that. But we heard from the committee that we don't want to spend $1,000 per acre foot for 5,000 acre feet. That would be $5 million for just 5,000 acre feet. They directed us to just look at what options are out there, and that's kind of where we kind of get to that recommendation to utilize those conservation programs, because they're just a much more cost-effective option to create a little bit more security with regards to the next couple years.
Understood. Thank you, Ms. Flory. President Martin, I would like to echo what Director Planback said, and if we could have Ms. Flory give us a status update. If we do decide to go with stage one or any sort of stages, I would also like for Ms. Flory to give us an update at every board meeting regarding what is our current status. That's it for me. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, Director Ozahowski. Your comment request is noted. I'm going to go to Director Atkins. You've been waiting a long time to make your comment, sir. Go ahead.
It's fine. I wanted to say, Matt, nice job on your presentation. Sarah, your brilliant use of color makes it engaging. And both of you, excellent content. Thank you for that. The question I had has to do with the resolution and the comment that Director Planbeck made. This question is directed at Matt. That particular whereas, where it talks about 20% compared to 2010 levels, you're talking about how well our customers achieved conservation in the past, right? You're not saying that we've already done that, and you're saying the customer group that we have has been successful in achieving this in the past. Is that true, Matt Dickens?
Director Atkins, that's correct.
Okay, so if you were to rework that particular whereas to talk about the achievement in the past and that we're hopeful that they can do it again, that's kind of the thrust you're going for, not that we set a 20% goal, met it, and that's where we are, and now we're having to conserve even more. Okay. I just wanted to make it clear. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Atkins. Director, Vice President Gladbach.
Yeah, first of all, thanks, Sarah and Matt, for excellent presentation. I had a quick question, Sarah. This is an easy one. Okay. How much savings do we get per acre foot or per 1,000 acre feet from the ag rate?
I'm going to have to get back to you on that.
Okay.
All I know is it's cheaper to pump water out of the wells in the ag areas in the winter because there's less people using the water. not, there's less demand. So I can look into that and get back to you.
Yeah. Well, why don't you share that information with all the directors? Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Gladbach. Director Klambeck.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that, you know, the new sites proposal and the Antelope Valley water banking is fine, but there has to be water to put in it. And at 0% allocation, it's not going to matter that we might get 10 or 20,000 acre feet of storage if we don't have any water to store. I just want to mention that. And then I didn't tell my story that I wanted to tell about visiting a friend in Valencia Hills, and a neighbor has just consistently had water running down the gutter to the point where there's algae growing in the gutter. And I called and asked that the service department take a look at this, and gave them the address. And whoever was kind of perturbed with me. And they kept saying, well, we can't do anything about it. He knows it's doing it, and we can't do anything about it. So I really think it's important that we are able to start doing something about it. I mean, this was a lot of water. The gutter was green. So I'm just hoping that, number one, if we do level one, that is going to give the ability of someone to go out there and tell them they have to fix it. I mean, this was coming right out of his backyard or something. He was just letting something run. Am I correct that number one will allow the agency to go and talk to these people doing things like that?
Director Plumbeck, that's correct.
Is that it, Director Plumbeck?
Yeah, that was it. I just wanted to make sure people understand at zero allocation, we're not getting anything for a water bank.
Okay, very good. Director Colley.
Yeah, I just I wanted to mention that from a financial standpoint, in a drought, it serves us not to sell more water. It's a net loss to sell something you have to buy at $1,000 plus an acre foot. So the conservation is definitely the financial to our financial advantage. I just wanted to make sure that particularly new directors understood that it's we will be suffering the financial hits that are shown in the presentation regardless, and it's not going to help us to sell more water. Thanks.
Very good. Are there any other questions or comments from the board on for Sarah or Matt? Vice President Morton, so go ahead.
Appreciated the presentations from both Sarah and Matt. I would just point out that if we anticipate a loss of $970 per unsold acre foot of water, and we anticipate 10% conservation, that's $7 million out of our budget. So I think before we get too wound up in exacting conservation from everyone, we realize that there's a significant financial impact to us. We still have to have the same employees, the same infrastructure, et cetera. But I would support the recommended the staff recommended.
I would move the staff recommendation.
So Director Atkins moves the staff recommendation. Go ahead, Vice President Gladbach, go ahead.
I just second it.
All right. So we have a motion and a second for staff recommendation.
I would like to make a substitute motion, or at least have the inclusion whereas with the 20% be reworded per Mr. Atkins or Director Atkins' suggestion, that it looks like we our valley was great at reaching that level, and we're gonna, or something like that, so that it doesn't look like, okay, that happened and it's over. Would that be possible to reword that?
I see Matt Dickens shaking his head. Yes.
Yes, Director Planbeck. We'll reword that to show okay. the successful accomplishment of that.
Okay, then I would like to.
That's fine, Len.
Okay.
Thanks.
BJ, you have your hand up again.
One quick question. If I'm not mistaken, the staff recommendation I read was for 10%, but the governor's voluntary recommendation is 15%. How do we reconcile those two? Just simply by going with the staff recommendation is what I was perceiving.
Director Atkins, I believe that question was asked previously as well, but I think that our strategy would be to enact stage one of the water shortage contingency plan, which would also trigger stage one of the water shortage and water conservation ordinance, but that we would also communicate out the governor's 50% voluntary conservation target. So we do have to report that. We will communicate that. But in terms of our execution of the expression of our plan, it would be a stage one for both the plan and the ordinance.
Great. Thank you.
Director Kelly.
Do we have a substitute motion that needs a second, or was Director Planbeck looking at an amendment to the original proposal?
I think it was an amendment, and Director Gladbeck accepted it.
Thank you.
Yes, Atkins and Gladbeck accepted it.
Is that it, Director Kelly?
Yes.
Very good. Director Colley.
I'm a little bit confused as to what staff intends to get the additional savings. Are we not going to recommend alternate day watering or anything else? We're just going to say, hey, please, you know, do 5% better than what we anticipate with stage one, without any specific recommendations. I don't understand quite what we're intending to do, since the committee's recommendation was to use specifically the stage two mechanisms, but making them voluntary and suggesting to the public that the water agency would like you to do these things, which we thought were the next most logical things to do to save water. But we're not going to do that. We're just going to say, oh, and just save another 5%. I don't understand what we're asking to be done.
Vice President Martinson, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I will say that what we found in New Hall when we requested, when we messaged and requested voluntary reduction in consumption, our consumers reduced consumption more than they were asked to. And I think people want to do the right thing. They understand that if you use it today, it won't be there tomorrow. And I think we can expect a solid response from our customer base as we have received in the past.
Thank you, Director Vice President Mortensen. Matt Dickens, can you respond to Director Colley on his question?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Director Colley and President Martin, for your questions. And again, the the water shortage contingency plan provides us with strategies to communicate water conservation at various different levels. And while certainly we anticipate that the measures specific to stage one can achieve up to a 10% reduction, that's what was designed, that was the strategy, that was the goal. In this case, there's an additional piece, which I think you touched on, and that is that the governor has called for 15% voluntary conservation. And we're saying that we think voluntary conservation plus the components embedded in the stage one can get us to a 15%. Now, we still have to monitor performance, and I think that we'll, as the board has requested, we're going to have to both monitor performance and report performance to the board, as well as the State Water Resource Control Board, so that we are tracking that trending in conservation.
Thank you. Thank you, Matt. Director Colley, does that address your concern?
Well, I guess it answers the question. We're not going to be asking for the specific sorts of things that are in stage two, which I think is unfortunate. And I'm not sure why we would not. Just to make specific suggestions to folks, as opposed to just say, hey, the governor wants you to save some extra water and you should do that. Providing concrete suggestions would probably help us out. But if we're not going to do it, I understand that's the will of the board. Thanks.
Well, we don't know it's the will of the board until we vote. Director Brownstein.
Can I make a substitute motion?
You certainly can.
I'm going to have a substitute motion to enact stage two.
All right. There's a substitute motion. There's a substitute motion and a second on the floor. Do you, Director Bronstein, do you concur with the change in language on the 2020, the savings that we've accrued based on the earlier state mandates? The changes that Director Planback then? Yes. Okay. All right. So we now have a substitute motion on the floor. With again the change, the wording changes the Director Planback and Director Atkins asked, and I think Matt understood those. Matt Dickens understood those changes. So, if there's no further discussion, I'd like to call for a vote on the Well, we have other hands up. Director Armitage, go ahead.
Thank you. I guess I'm having a hard time supporting a stage two declaration because the messaging to the community all along up until this very point has been, we're fine, we're fine, we're fine, but please conserve so we can meet the governor's goals. And I just think that jumping to a stage two is a confusing message to the public. I mean, I think it would be great to be able to conserve at the level of stage two, but I just, I think it's confusing to jump straight to a stage two without going through a stage one, at least initially. I mean, we can switch gears at any point is my assumption, and please correct me if I'm wrong. But I think it's even more confusing to go to a straight to a stage two. So thank you.
Director Ozahowski.
Yeah, I concur with Director Armitage. I think we should start at stage one. And then I believe the Watershed Committee, Conservation Committee, they can report to us findings, what happens, you know, month to month, and then we can find out how well we're performing. And I agree, jumping stage two right away does sound a very confusing message to the public. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, Director Ozahowski. Director Planback.
I just want to say I'm torn because I absolutely think we need the stage two. I think we need to be able to be more proactive in getting, I don't think you're going to get anything. I think you got conservation in October because it rained and the temperatures were cool. It wasn't because people were trying to do anything. And that's why I've been concerned with the message up till now that everything is fine. So I'm concerned about this, and I am going to vote for going to stage two, but you know, I'm fine if we bring it back and we go to stage two next month too. That would work also.
Mr. Stone, can you hold on until we hear Director Bronstein? Director Bronstein.
I understand everybody's concerns about jumping straight to stage two. I think that part of the problem is that we've been dragging our legs at getting to stage one. I think that we've been going to stage one with a mixed message of 15 or 10% is confusing. And I think we're going to achieve what we need to achieve. And it's our job to do what needs to be done and to get people to conserve the 15. So as much as it's uncomfortable and, you know, difficult to sell it, I think that this is it's the responsible thing to do.
Mr. Stone, go ahead.
Thanks. Well, I certainly want to let the board continue down the path of kind of defining the policy through motions. I think that's appropriate. But I would just offer a couple of thoughts from listening, if they're helpful. And Director Planbeck actually hit on one of my thoughts, which is this won't be the final time we visit the subject between now and when we have our 2022 state project allocation. So this would set us up potentially to stage one would set us up for further stages, if warranted, and if not warranted, we could stay in that mode and make sure supply conditions don't deteriorate. The other thought I just was going to offer is, and I'm not sure if this is feasible because we have, you know, with the well-intended mechanisms of the state kind of mandating a plan format and then trying to come up with a plan that matches an ordinance and having that all in place ahead of time, and then having the governor kind of, we sort of constructed something, and I'll just use a socket wrench, you know. We have all standard sockets in our plan, and the governor threw us a metric, you know, 15%, which was in between our two sizes. So, you know, which is fine. What I'm wondering from staff is it possible to just adopt stage one, but note that the target would be 15 rather than 10 for voluntary conservation, and just message one number? And that might be a path we could discuss after the test vote on the stage two, if that were not to succeed. But I felt like is there a middle ground that would actually have more clarity? That was where I was trying to head.
Well, I think Matt Dickens' response would be helpful in the vote for the substitute motion. Go ahead, Matt, if you have some thoughts.
Thank you, President Martin and General Manager Stone. I believe that we could message a stage one with of the water conservation plan and the water conservation and water supply shortage ordinance, but still have a voluntary goal of 15%. I think that we can message that because the governor's call exists and our plan is a stage in stepping into that direction. So I think that we can reasonably do that without confusing too many folks. And again, I do think that just add a little of experience here that the irrigation impacts, the time to really the time, the strategic time to get the most bang out of that type of action, and I guess traction out of that time of action would be around February. I try to think about what was the news event 2 months ago. 3 months ago, what was the headline in the news? And I spoke about this in the water shortage, watershed committee, where I believe it was at that time we had withdrawn from Afghanistan. That seems so long ago. So now we're putting irrigation restrictions as people are reducing their irrigation use. It's kind of like telling you what the speed limit was on the freeway when you're getting off. To me, I think if you're going to get traction, you want to get that on the front end and people getting on the freeway. And so the time to do that would be right around February. And plus, we'll, like the board has asked and what we've said, we'll have quite a bit more information, the more data in our repository to be able to make those types of decisions. But again, to answer your question specifically, General Manager Stone, we are able to, I believe we would say stage one, but we're shooting for the governor's voluntary 15% conservation target.
Thank you, Matt Dickens. I would like to go ahead and call for a vote on the substitute motion. I think we've each had a number of opportunities to comment. So, Madam Secretary, will you please call the vote on the substitute motion?
Mr. President, could you restate the substitute motion so that everybody knows what they're voting on?
Substitute motion is for stage two, with a modified language about the previous savings as requested by Director Planbeck and Director Athens.
Okay. As I call your name, please state your vote. Director Ford.
No.
Director Planbeck.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Atkins.
No.
Director Ozuchowski.
No.
Director Cooper?
No.
Director Colley?
Yes.
Director Kelly?
No.
Director Armitage?
No.
Vice President Mortensen?
No.
Vice President Gladbach?
No.
President Martin?
No.
Thank you. The substitute motion did not pass.
Very good. Now, can we call the roll for the original motion for stage one with the modified language and the resolution?
As I call your name, please state your vote. Director Atkins?
Yes.
Director Cooper?
Yes.
Director Armitage?
Yes.
Director Ford?
Yes.
Director Colley?
Yes.
Director Bronstein?
Yes.
Director Plambeck?
Yes.
Director Ozuchowski?
Yes.
Director Kelly?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbach?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen?
Yes.
President Martin?
Yes.
This item passes, and that's resolution number SCB-243 with that modification to the 10th recital, whereas.
Thank you, Board, for the thoughtful and extensive discussion on this. Thank you to Sarah and to Matt for the wonderful presentation and the response to all the questions. We very much appreciate it. Let's move now to item 7.4. This is the approval of the continuation of remote meetings as described in AB 361 and to make the required findings. Mr. Bunn is going to present this item tonight.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is the authorization to continue virtual meetings. We're trying to get this to be a routine, because it's done every 30 days. We're not quite there yet. We ended up making changes to the staff memo and changes to the recommendation based on the preference expressed by the board last time to go for the finding that state and local officials continue to impose or recommend measures to promote social distancing, as opposed to saying that voting in person would have a direct impact on the safety of the attendees. So we altered the recommendation to be the same as the board has approved in the past. And that's what we've got.
I'll move the motion.
Okay, let's take public comment. I'll take your motion, Director Plambeck. Are there any public comments on this, April?
There's a public comment, but I think it was a holdover from the last item, so let me just verify. Ms. Noltmeyer, I just want to verify that your public comment is on item 7.4 and not on item 7.3. Is that correct? Please press star 6.
Yeah, you're correct. It was with regard to what you were just voting on. I don't think it would affect the vote at all. But
Ms. Noltmeyer, hold on just one moment. President Martin, would you like to allow Ms. Noltmeyer to make public comment on the previous item 7.3?
Yes, go ahead, Ms. Noltmeyer.
Yes, I was listening to the entire. I've been on for your full meeting here, and what I'm curious about is you're talking about this, and you're saying all of us conserve our water, etc. Fine, I agree. We have a drought, but also we're also, and you are approving it. The city's approving it. The county's approving it. It's more and more thousands of homes, literally thousands of them, between the county and the city. Thousands of homes are in the process of being in one stage or another, and it's like, where is that included in your thinking when you constantly, and you always approve water for them? I don't think you've ever not approved water for anyone that's building, and somehow it just, what you're doing doesn't. And it's very detailed. I'm sure it's costing us a lot of money to have all these reports and done. And I've heard them a number of times. I can't tell you how many times I've heard these reports. And it doesn't make sense in what's going on. fit then, of course, a lot of the, I don't agree with very much of what you do, but this one just strikes me as spending so much time, so much money planning this. At the same time, you're approving water for all of these projects. And you're, what are you going to do? Tell us to cut back on, and you are already, you're saying cut down back on what we're going to be allowed to do. If you can explain your mentality on this, I would be interested in hearing it once, because it certainly doesn't come through in the questions I'm hearing from members of the board at all. I haven't been too impressed with any of them, as you probably well know. And just tell me, do we have any hope that with what's going on right now, that any of this will change, or is it just going to be you will just make everybody cut back on the water they use so that you can accommodate the thousands and thousands of other homes that are being built and people being brought into our area? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Noltmeyer. Are there any other public comments?
On item 7.4.
Item 7.4. There are. Hold on just a moment. Ms. Kaufman, go ahead and hit star 6. You may begin your public comment, or just go ahead and unmute.
Thank you, April. Have I begun?
Yes, you have.
Oh, thank you, everybody. I had withdrawn because I thought we weren't allowed to comment on that. Thank you, everybody, in that case. I have a question and a comment in regard to the voluntary 15 or 10% conservation of water use by the public. My question is, what about apartment complexes, other living complexes, where water bills are collectively paid by the HOA via a property management, which leads to my comment of, if I live in a townhouse condo complex, where that is, which is the case for me, when the voluntary 15% consumption use first came up, I sent an email to the property manager and immediately CC'd it to also the board, fervently requesting that an email be sent promptly to all the residents. Needlessly to say, nothing of that sort was done, sad to say. And you know, what it would be nice if these building people would take as much care and concern as the rest of us seem to be doing. I'm stuck in a townhouse, so I don't live in a single family home where my ability to conserve 15% of my water usage goes down in history as being noticed and or appreciated. So that was my question and comment. And I do want to echo as politely as possible that I was very concerned about also how will all this new housing fit in on our water usage. So there you go. But thank you. That whole segment that you all just went through was remarkable, just absolutely remarkable. And I'm very, very impressed with every one of you involved in that, and especially, of course, Sarah and Matt. But all of you to have to plug in so much time. Wow. So thank you very, very much. Thank you, April.
Thank you, Ms. Kaufman. Is there all any right. further public comment on item 7.4?
Four, yes, please.
Ms. Dugal, if you have a comment on item 7.4, you may begin your public comment.
Unmute. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Oh, excellent. Okay, thank you so much for having me on here. Just wanted to say for the last one, I appreciate the vote. And on 7.4, I would like to say I appreciate very much the continuation for all of you to approve the remote meetings. They're extremely helpful for me And I appreciate all of your hard work and being able to listen them into the meetings as well. And one just really quick thing, if there was any way that I could request to have you guys maybe consider having the public comment after the board members are allowed to speak for discussion. It's very helpful and useful for me to hear what everybody has to say, so that if I do have something to comment, that I can be well informed with my comment and not waste your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have no further public comment.
It does not appear so.
All right. Director Planbeck has made a motion. I need a second.
Bronstein seconds.
A second by Director Bronstein. Is there any discussion, question, or comments from the board before we call the roll? Seeing none, hearing none. Oh, I see Director Cooper. You have your hand up.
Thank you, President Martin. We're about the only public agency in the Valley that is not holding public meetings in person. The public's business should be done in the public, and that's what we were elected to do. I think it's time that we follow the City Council, the College of the Canyons, we follow the school boards, the high school boards, and get our meetings back into the boardroom where they originated and where they belonged. I understand we still have an ad hoc committee that's going and looking how we can potentially open this up for other avenues, but I think it's time that we get back to the boardroom. So with that, my vote will be a no. I think that we should be opening this back up again.
Thank you, Director Cooper. Any other comments from the director? Director Bronstein.
Thank you so much. I respect Director Cooper's opinion on this very much. I would like to add my personal point of view. My youngest is asthmatic, and we finally are approved now to get the shots for under 12. And I would very much appreciate to wait till she's fully vaccinated before I am in a room with a lot of other people that, you know, just out of respect, I don't want to accidentally bring something back to her because of that. And I think that, you know, it's a time matter, right? She just got her shot. There's another 5 weeks and then we can all go back. So that's my, you know, it'd be nice to wait until everybody's vaccinated or capable of vaccinating if they want to.
Thank you, Director Bronstein. Director Armitage.
Thank you. I would argue that we are open to the public in the current format that we have. And I feel like we're actually even more accessible to the public in this Zoom format, considering we're still continuing in a pandemic situation. So I just wanted to present the other.
Okay. Any other comments from the directors? So I will add my, before we call for the vote, I will add my comment. I was prepared tonight to vote no on this, fully realizing it's most likely going to be a symbolic vote. But I really believe we need to get back to a meeting in person, certainly by January. And if it takes another month of these remote meetings to get everyone vaccinated, I have no problem with that. But I will still vote no on this tonight. Director Ozahosky, what you have a comment?
Yeah, Mr. Bond, Governor Newsom extended his emergency powers until March. Is that correct?
No, he hasn't acted on the emergency. It just continues in effect.
Okay, it continues until March, or
until he cancels it.
Okay. Understood. Thank you. Back to you, President Martin.
All right. We have a motion and a second on the floor. If there's no further discussion, Madam Secretary, please call the roll for the vote.
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
No.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Cawley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Osohofsky, how do you vote?
No.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Plumbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, how do you vote?
No.
President Martin, how do you vote? You're muted, President Martin.
I vote no.
This item passes.
Very good. Thank you all. We now can move on to item 8, General Manager's Report on Activities, Projects, Programs, presented by Mr. Matt Stone. Go ahead, Mr. Stone.
Okay, no report in light of the hour and that we have legal counsel waiting who need to be in court in the morning.
Very good. Item 9, committee report, recap report for informational purposes only. You have just one committee report, which is engineering. We covered many of those items tonight. Is there any questions from the board on item 9 committee reports? Is there any public comment, April?
There is public comment, but I think it might have been on the previous item. So I'm going to ask again, does anyone have any public comment on item number 9, which is the committee meeting recap reports for informational purposes? If you do not, please lower your hand. Yes. Okay, Ms. Noltmeyer, hold on just a moment. Ms. Noltmeyer, if you have public comment on item number 9, please hit star 6 and you may begin your public comment. Ms. Noltmeyer? Okay, I'm going to assume that she no longer has public comment, so we'll lower her hand, and there does not appear to be any further public comment.
Very good, thank you. Move on to item 10, President's Report. I'll try to do this quickly. There's a couple of meetings outside of our area that I need to mention. The AQUA 2020 Fall Conference is being held in Pasadena on November 30 through December 2. Conference is being held both virtually and in person. There's also going to be the SCV Chamber State of the County being held at Six Flags Magic Mountain on December 9th. The doors open at 10:30 and the program starts at 12 p.m. There will be some upcoming special board meetings. There will be a special board meeting on January 25th at 6:30 regarding the redistricting effort. There's also going to be a special board meeting on January 31st, 2022 at 6 p.m. for ethics training. Both of these meetings will most likely be virtual, but may be in person depending on the situation with COVID-19 and the continuation of remote meetings as described in AB 361 and the board's findings and the board's vote. There's also some upcoming virtual meetings on November 18th, 2021. The Public Outreach and Legislative Committee will be meeting at 5:30 p.m. We were asked to give heads up on committee meetings coming forward. And that completes item 10, President's Report. Are there any public comments, April?
There is not.
Very good. We can move on to item 11, AB 1234 reports. There was one AB 1234 report that was submitted with your packet and several additional reports that are posted to the website. Does anyone have any additional AB 1234 reports tonight? Director Armitage.
Thank you. I want to report that I virtually attended a meeting of the new executive board of the Special Districts Association of North Los Angeles County on November 3rd. During which we finalize the chapter bylaws, and the next meeting will be in January, yet to be determined. Thank you.
Director Cooper.
Thank you, President Martin. Yesterday, I had a meeting with the AQUA representative, as well as the new chairman for the chairwoman for the Region 8 area, Gloria Gray. And we went over our recommendations for committee assignments from the LA County area, from the Region 8 area. And those will be going on to AQUA, to the president, to determine. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Cooper. Director, I think, let's see. Director, Vice President Martinson.
I believe Director Planbeck had her hand up before I did.
Well, go ahead, Director Planbeck, by all means.
Well, thank you, Director Martinson. That's very chivalrous. Yeah, I have two meetings to report. I attended the ceremony to honor veterans in the Valley on November 10th at the Bella Vita Senior Center. And I can report that our president gave an excellent speech to introduce one of the honorees, our director, Mr. Cooper. And there was one veteran there that was 100 years old, and she stood up and took applause, and it was all quite amazing. And I wanted to attend because my ex-husband was a Marine and fought in Vietnam, and I'm not very supportive of wars, but sometimes they're necessary, sometimes they're not. But he went over with 1,500 people, and only 120 came back alive. So it would be hopeful if we could avoid wars. And my second meeting that I attended was the AQUA report on PFAS, and it was really interesting. It was given by an attorney, and of course, we've had our closed sessions on how we are addressing legal issues, but it was also good to hear her representation of possible issues that may come up. I don't know if we've looked at disposal costs yet. I hope that that's going to be something that we can get out of it, and why it was necessary to sue Monsanto and not the local fire department for using it. So those explanations were interesting. And then she also gave a background on how it came to be discovered, which of course was DuPont in Virginia, where they killed all the cattle that time. And there's a pretty interesting movie out on it, if anybody, I think it's called Dark Waters or something. But that was really a good seminar, and I'm sorry I didn't get the write-up done, because it might have been helpful to have more detail, but I think it's online if you want to go back and watch it.
Director Planbeck, what date was that again?
I believe it was November 4th. I can look it up and make sure, but I'm pretty sure it was November 4th, and it was a virtual meeting. It was through AQUA. I'll Great. Send that to you tomorrow, April.
Thank you.
Correct. Vice President Martinson.
Oh, I thought I had submitted my written report, but it isn't here. So I just wanted to mention that I attended the 2021 State of the City at the New Kenyon Country Community Center. It was beautiful, a large facility. It was done by videos made by each of the council members, highlighting various accomplishments that they had done. It was very well done, and the facility is absolutely beautiful.
Vice President Martinson, just for the record, it is in the board packet under item 11.2.
Not in mine.
Okay.
Yeah, it's page number 127. I have to put the stronger glasses on to tell you what page number it is, but hold on just All a right. second and I can tell you. Just so you know, it was included in the packet, 137.
Director Armitage, do you have another report?
No, I actually had a question for Vice President Gladbach about his report, which I found interesting. Can I ask it?
Of course. Go ahead.
So the bonus you referred to in your report, I'm just curious, is that, that's not any funds coming from water agencies?
No, the National Water Resources Association, their membership are state associations, such as Aqua, not individual water agencies such as Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency. So all the funds are coming out of state.
Thanks.
Does that answer your question?
Okay. Thanks. It does. I just wanted to make sure that wasn't any ratepayer money going to a bonus. So thank you.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask a question about Director Cooper's report, if I could.
Go ahead, Director Planbeck.
Well, I just wondered if you recommended everybody we recommended. Did it sound like they were going to accept them all?
You know, the committees that are open committees, everybody that applied for open committees, we recommended. There are committees that are limited committees, and we had to narrow those down. Some committees we only get 4 appointments to, some we get 5. We made some recommendations with alternates. We ranked them, and these will go on to the president of Aqua, and then the president gets to make the final selection.
Thank you.
Lynn, which one were you concerned with?
Oh, I wanted to know about both of them because I think it'd be exciting if we got some of the people on the limited committees.
Just for our benefit and Jerry's too, is we have Dennis Albiani, which I think we rank him like number 2 to get him on the committee. We've been wanting to do that for some time. And on the Legal Affairs Committee. And there were a number of others. People that put down, this is my second or third choice for committees. They were farther down the list.
All right. Are there any other AB 1234 reports tonight? Did we have any public comment on the AB 1234s, April?
We do. Just one moment. Ms. Dunn, please hit *6 and you may begin your public comment.
Well, I must say, I was going to complain because last meeting, you know, I've said this before, when you go to committees and you give a verbal report to various of these activities, and you don't really say, oh, it was a nice meeting and blah, 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 blah. And I have complained about that in the past. But tonight, I tell you, I cannot believe my ears. Everyone that gave a verbal report did it, actually gave me lots of information. I have to commend the whole group of you that did this. And I know in the past I've seen Mr. Martin's reports, and he's done very well in, you know, in his written reports. And you do learn something. So I do want to thank you so much tonight. I just am shocked because I actually heard all of those people that gave the verbal reports to say what happened. Thank you again. And that is my comments.
Thank you, Ms. Dunn. Is there any further public comment? There is not. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, Ms. Dunn, for the comment. And we can now move on to item 12, director reports. And we do have a couple of itemized director reports. We'll start with 12.1. This will be presented by Director Colley, and it is to discuss and consider changing the board policy on director remote attendance as at board and committee meetings. Director Colley.
Yeah, my suggestion is, given this has got no timeliness need, and given the hour and given the attorneys waiting, I'd be just fine pressing it till next meeting. That'd be better. You're muted.
Yes, Director Colley, I'm fine with that. We can discuss it at the next meeting. All right, so we move to item 12.2. Director Kelly, do you still want to have this item since the board voted to continue remote meetings?
I believe since the continuation of remote meeting, that makes this this item void, so no, we do not need to continue it.
Very good. So that takes care of, we will now. Are there any other director reports tonight, oral reports from the board members? Director Armitage, go ahead.
I don't want to take a lot of time because I know we want to move on to closed session, but I just want to really briefly say that I've enjoyed hearing from staff members give presentations to the committee meetings in the last couple of weeks. It was really great to hear from Ms. Campos, who is an assistant engineer from the engineering section. And it was really great to hear from Mr. Huerta last night to share about the fascinating GIS program. So I just want to share my appreciation to the administrators for your leadership and encouraging your staff to make presentations so that we as the directors can meet more of the staff members of the agency. And I was going to say something else, but I will defer that to the next meeting as well. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Director Armitage. I have a quick one. I appreciate Director Planbeck mentioning the salute to patriots at the Bella Vita Senior Center. It was my honor, my absolute honor to and pleasure to make the presentation to Director Cooper as one of the six honorees this year. And I'd also like to give a shout out to Directors Colley and Directors Kelly, our sitting veterans on the board. Thank you for your service to our country. All right. Do we have any public comment on the director reports tonight, April?
No, we do not.
Very good. We can now, we are going to go into closed session to discuss. Where's my list? Here it is. The long list. Okay, we are going into closed session to discuss items 13.1, 13.2, and 13.3. You will have to leave the Zoom webinar. Board members and appropriate staff will need to disconnect from the Zoom webinar and connect to the Teams meeting. Please refer to the login information that was sent out. Members of the public and any staff may stay on the current line. Once the closed session is over, the board will reconnect to the Zoom webinar for closed session announcements and any remaining items. The board is reminded that once again, this is closed session and you need to be in a place where no one else can hear the discussion. We will be taking a very brief 5-minute break, transitioning from this Zoom webinar to the closed session. And with that, we will leave the Zoom webinar and we will return to the Teams meeting for closed session at 10:02. Thank you, board.